Your security service and Nkululeko Mqwazi. You're all very welcome, and also welcome to the Deputy Manager of Police, Honorable M.M. Sotu. Welcome to her as well. We will also attend today's meeting. Welcome to as well. The purpose really of this meeting today is in the next 3 weeks, the Portfolio Committee on Police is going to focus on the main budgets that falls under us, that is the Department of Police, IPET, the Secretariat, as well as CIRA, the Private Security Regulator. And as you might know, that 11% of this country's budget is allocated to police, 11% of the budget of this country. So it's very important from an oversight perspective that the Portfolio Committee do proper analysis, evaluation, and introspection on where we are. We're going to especially focus on leadership, the leadership of the institutions, the leadership of the police, the leadership of IBET, the leadership of the Secretariat, the leadership of CIRA, in terms of ensuring that we get the necessary outputs. We've got the necessary leadership in place, and what's the role of the Portfolio Committee in ensuring that that happens. So that we're very honored to have the Deputy Minister with us. She's also going to be with us tomorrow because Program 1 and 2 falls under her authority. So, and at any time, if you're also a Member of Parliament, so you're also welcome if you want to ask questions or come in at any time. You're always welcome. So the next 2 weeks is going to focus on that. Today is really to get a perspective from civil society. Because if 11% of the country's budget is spent on safety and security, we need also the input of civil society. What is your view? What is your experiences? What do you see as the challenges? But also solutions. We must get solutions. And also from your different vantage points. Also the view of the unions. You represent more than 200,000 people. And what is your emphasis? So that's going to be critical. We also give opportunity after each and every presentation for the Honourable Members of Parliament to ask short and pointed questions, not speeches, because we are kind of pressured for time. I've got an indication that there is a load shedding today, and this building will be affected at 2 o'clock. And there's no backup generator, so we'll have to use the time that is available really to make good progress. And then the adoption of the principle or report we anticipate is May will be that day for the adoption. So without further wasting of time, I'm going to ask the honourable members to introduce themselves, and then we will immediately go to the presentation by the Parliamentary Budget Office. Honourable Mulabatsi, we'll start on your side.
Good morning, I'm Sydney. My name is Angie Mulibati. I can let from the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Pindi Lamala, a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name
is Lecturer, a member of the committee.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good morning, my name is Akil Mbele, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. Right, let's start with the Parliamentary Research Unit and over to them.
Good morning, members and guests. I'm Nira Orlali. I'm from the Parliamentary Budget Office. And you know, the office has been established in terms of the Money Rules, Members and Procedures Act. We provide independent and objective analysis to the two parliaments, especially on the budgets and other money goals. Currently, we only serve the Appropriations Committee and the Finance Committee, but in future, we intend to also provide information or assistance to other parliamentary committees. The presentation covers only a few points. It covers some of the focus areas of this department. And then we will look at an overview of expenditure and estimate trends over the medium term. We will also look at the expenditure trends and estimates by program of this department. And then just a few points on the APC of the department. So just as an introduction, the aim of this analysis was basically just a technical analysis. we are not, I don't have the knowledge of the police per se. So it was basically just technically orientated. Just determine the credibility and efficiency and responsiveness of this department, but also to identify possible focus areas of oversight and possible recommendations for the committee to make to this department. The performance analysis focused on the relevance of the selected performance indicators within the budget document, and then also to look at the alignment of the indicators to the medium-term strategic framework. The budget analysis focused on the alignment of the medium-term estimate expenditure with previous outcomes of expenditure in this department, and also whether the spending of the medium-term estimate of actually aligned to government priorities. So the focus areas of this department that have been indicated in the budget is to create an enabling environment for the department's core functions. Within this focus areas basically means the upgrade of infrastructure and to provide a victim-friendly infrastructure at police stations. And they also want to strengthen the criminal justice system. In terms of this, spending is actually allocated in terms of information technology. And they also want to facilitate community participation and building partnerships, and with this it's actually to develop community forums. They want to enhance the safety of women and children, and within this the monitoring of this will be through the improvement of detection rate of crime towards this group of people. And the department wants to professionalize the police service, and in this they actually allocated funding for training and research, and they also want to improve the discipline in the police service, and they also want to do marketing campaigns to actually attract the youth, especially graduated youth, to the service. Next, in terms of the performance indicators, this is just the performance indicators that were presented in the budget document. It's not the indicators in the ABC. These indicators are mainly output indicators. They provide specific data. And some of these indicators are not always aligned or relevant to the focus areas of this department. All government partners actually should be encouraged to develop efficiency and effectiveness indicators. These kind of indicators will assist members and committees and all oversight bodies basically to determine whether we spend the money effectively and efficiently, meaning whether the input is actually delivering what they say they're going to do, the output, and whether the outputs actually are aligned and will contribute to the outcomes of national and provincial and the department in itself. In terms of targeting over the medium term, the analysis show that some of these targets are not based on baseline. Some of the targets are based on averages of the previous outcomes. And departments should be encouraged to look at baseline, whether it's the first outputs of the indicator or whether it's the latest output. In practice, departments normally use the latest output. If the latest output was 10 targets in 2014, we use that output to determine the medium-term expenditure targets, or the medium-term output for that specific indicator. In terms of the overfield expenditure, the cost drivers of this department is definitely compensation of employees, computer services, fuel, oil, and gas. The operating leases are quite high in this department, and machinery and equipment. And when you look at the spending priorities, you will see there's a very good alignment between the spending priorities and the cost drivers in this department. Then the analysis also shows that the department definitely can spend. There's no doubt about it. The police service can spend. But the historic information and the outcomes constantly show over and underspending within the programs, but also within the different items in the department. And you will also find that some of these examples are indicated in the report that was also distributed for this presentation. In terms of the revision of the 2015 medium-term expenditure estimates, you can see in most cases there are no alignment between the medium-term estimates and the actual outcomes of the previous 3 years. The underspending is rather chief for specific items, in specific for infrastructure, is always used to fund compensation of employees. And then cost containment measures are not realized. You can see the department when they do their budget and the medium-term expenditure estimates, they really try and reduce or slow the growth in these items. But when you look at actual outcomes at the end of the year, it's been overspent. Then our structure identified a few risk areas for the medium-term guided per program. In terms of program one, I've identified advertisements as advertising. So you will see the actual outcome, just as an example, for 2013 was already at more than 24,000 million. And then over the medium term, that budget reduces to 17, just over 70,000 million. So that might pose a risk, especially when you want to increase domestic stability. And to increase domestic stability, you need to increase the number of personnel. And to increase the number of personnel, you need to recruit and advertise. And they also have this marketing campaign, which will actually use the advertising budget. So I'm not sure whether there are other measures implemented to try and stick to this budget. In terms of transfers to households, in the previous 3 years, that budget increased by more than 21%. And the budget over the medium term only increases by 3.6%. That might be supposed to rescue the administration program. In terms of the visible policing program, compensation of employees and personnel numbers has been identified as possible risk, fuel oil and gas, and the operating leases. Just to remember or to note, in this department, more than 50% of the personnel numbers of the entire department are invisible policing. So it's very important that we make sure that this budget is a credible budget, that the personnel numbers in this program is actually also credible. And what I've noticed when I looked at the personnel numbers, that there's a shift between level 7 to 10 to levels 1 to 6. And it's actually contrary to what is currently happening in the rest of the public service. In most of the public service, the number of personnel is reducing on the 1 to 6 level and the increase in the 7 to 10. So I'm not sure there's another policy or strategy in place for police that needs to do this shift. In terms of the fuel and gas invisible policing, the actual output for 2013 was already on 1.4 billion. And the department is reducing this budget in 2014 to 1.1 billion and will only increase 1.4 again in 2017-18. So I'm not also sure whether there are some efficiency gains planned for fuel and gas. Operating leases in future, it grew by 9.3% and over the medium term the growth is only 4.3%. In terms of program 3, detection services, some of the items that might pose a risk to this program is agency and support, also fuel and gas, consumable supply, stationary, operating leases, training and development. Most of these outcomes exceeded the estimates over the medium term. So again, the previous outcomes was a bit higher than what we think we can spend over the medium term. So the risk is actually that the budget will not be efficient to achieve the desired outcomes within the department. A few points on the APP. I must just indicate I only got hold of this APP yesterday, so I just identified a few points which the committee might use to try and make recommendations to improve the APP of this department. So the first one is the linkages of the strategic objectives with the strategic goals. The strategic goals are only reflected in the strategic plan. So if you want to assess whether there's alignment between the goals and objectives, you will always have to take the two documents to compare. the notion currently with some other departments are to also respect the goals in the APC so that you can make sure that you've got that alignment. The alignment is very important because you develop indicators for your strategic objectives, and if the objectives are aligned to your goals, then you will be sure that you actually achieve those goals that you set for yourself in your strategy. The strategic objectives are requirements in terms of the framework for the development of strategic plans and APPs. These are reflected in the APP, but I've also noticed that there are strategic priorities in the APP. Strategic priorities is the concept that you don't have to reflect in your APP. There's nothing wrong with reflecting it, but it's just an additional concept that has been reflected. In terms of the strategic objectives, indicators and targets, it is a requirement, and currently the APP has got very good strategic objectives, indicators and program performance indicators, but there's no distinction between the two, and the framework really defines from the departments to have strategic objectives indicators, which is a bit higher level than what the lower program performance indicators are. Departments must be encouraged to also find very good performance indicators. What I mean with good performance indicators, they must be well defined, they must be verifiable, they must be cost effective, and meaning with cost effectiveness, it shouldn't cost them more to collect the data than what the indicator, the value of the indicator actually is, or the usefulness of the indicator is. Indicators must always be appropriate and relevant to the outcomes of the department. Targets need to be smart. I've noted that a lot of the targets in the APP is percentage targets. If you have a target as a percentage, it must have an absolute number with it as well. Otherwise, it's actually useless. You cannot compare what you're actually measuring. And that is also a criteria of the framework for the development of strategic and annual performance plans. It's preferably not to have, rather have numbers as targets. It's easier to measure. In terms of the technical descriptions is the absolute necessity for your APP. All strategic objectives, strategic goals, strategic objective indicators, and program performance indicators needs to be well defined. It can be presented as an annex to the APP, which is not the case in this APP. It can be a separate document that is just presented on the website of the department, but it's very good to have because a technical description indicator will define the indicator. You will know exactly what you get and what you need to look for. It defines the source of the output. And it's also very good for auditor general purposes. Auditor general will immediately go to that technical description and they will immediately know where to look and what to look for to collect the data and to verify the outputs. So then, in conclusion, I just want to sum up what I've said, is most of the information or the performance indicators in the budget document. Its output is statistical driven. The selected performance indicators should assist members really to make an opinion whether it's efficient or effective, whether the department has spent efficiently or effectively, or whether the output has contributed to outcomes. The constant under and over expenditure within the program has been identified, and spending on training and development of future services and infrastructure development should be prioritized to ensure the performance on the medium-term strategic framework outcomes for this department. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will then ask the parliamentary researchers to give their presentation, and then we'll give opportunity for questions on that section.
Good morning, honorable members, and a special welcome to the honorable deputy minister of police. I'm going to take the minister quickly through the highlights of the budget analysis of the 2015-16 financial year. Honorable members, it's very important to look to have an overview of the previous financial year, which just ended in 2014-15. If we look at the adjusted budget of the Department of Police, they had a main appropriation which remained unchanged during the appropriations or the adjustment period. However, one important aspect to note is the fact that 150 million rand was shifted from buildings and fixed structures, which is capital assets, to compensation of employees, which is current payment, and that is against section 34, subsection 4 of the PFMA. That is, environment can only be approved by the National Assembly, but by default it was done. Honourable members, the Visual Policing and Protection and Security Services program was adjusted upwards, and the Detective Services program was adjusted downwards. Although the adjusted appropriation remained the same as the main appropriation, a lot of funds were shifted within the vote to between programs. Also, members, in terms of expenditure trends for the 14-15 financial year, the end of year figures for the fourth quarter is not available from Treasury yet because the financial year only ended in March. This March 2015. Also, the SAS is not reporting on it in their presentation, and the committee should ask the police to just give some indication as to the end of year spending for the 14-15 financial year. However, members, the spending of the third quarter is quite indicative of how it will pan out towards the end of the financial year. The spending on compensation of employees was higher than planned by 140.5 million rand at the end of the third quarter. Spending on goods and services was behind by 321.1 million rand. And spending on payments capital assets was also behind by 332.1 million. Also, members, during the last budget hearings, the committee made several recommendations to the Department of Police. Many of the recommendations were followed up in the 29th of January meeting. However, there are some still outstanding, which is the appointment of the Chief Financial Officer, the finalization of the disciplinary code or regulation, follow-up on the criminal order done by the FAS, the effectiveness of border control, the migration of personnel and cases from the detective service to the DPGI, and the retention plan for VIP protectors. Honourable members, in terms of the strategic overview for the 2014-2019 medium-term strategy framework, we should consider the alignment between the medium-term strategic framework and the NDP. According to item 3 of the medium-term strategic framework, it states that all people in South Africa are and feel safe. It lists also 5 main sub-outcomes. Yet the SAS strategic plan lists 4 priorities, of which only the strengthening of the criminal justice system corresponds. Now the SAS tries to show the link between how they prioritize the 2015-16 priorities based on the NTSF, but it's not quite clear, and I think members should really ask SAS to make sure that the link is clearly established. Also, honorable members, the alignment is lacking between the medium-term strategic framework sub-item indicators, as both of them are not included in the annual performance plan of the FAS. Of note is to improve FAS investigations, to conduct interviews with complainants within 24 hours. Another one is a computer-generated investigation progress report. And a third one is the cybercrime strategy that must be implemented, and to reduce level of contact crime, customer satisfaction surveys and recruitment must be done. Now these targets are all to be developed and implemented during the medium term strategic framework, and if it's not included in the APP, it's not sure how the staff will measure the success rate of these government priorities. Honourable members, also the crime intelligence driven police policing is the priority of the MPFS. But what's concerning is the first outcome of the turnaround strategy for crime intelligence is declaring a war on crime or against crime. Now internationally this has shown a demonstrable negative impact when you declare a war on your own citizens, and it's not useful to use terminology in that manner. Also, honourable members, the establishment of the National Management Forum as the main decision-making body of the SAPS has been established, and that should be unpacked by the department. And then, one thing that is lacking from the National Development Plan is the establishment of the National Policing Board, which is recommended to form quite crucial functions in the police, and the committee should ask the department whether this will be established in the immediate future or are they considering it. And also what the successes of the new recruitment framework are. The SAS is also establishing a research unit or component. When it was established, it was located within the office of the National Commissioner. It is not indicated as a key institution within the office of the National Commissioner currently, and also there are questions on who will be heading the research institute. Honourable members, also the manner in which the code of conduct will be incorporated into the disciplinary code or regulations should be established, as it took almost 7 years for the disciplinary code to be signed off, or to be to a stage where the minister can find off. It will be useful if the minister can ask whether this will have to go back to the bargaining council and whether the process will be restarted. Also, very important, there is a criminal justice system business plan that must be signed and incorporated into the APP at the beginning of the 15-16 financial year. And members should ask the department whether that has been incorporated into the IPP. Members, further looking at enterprise work, the staff has indicated 12 crucially important risks, but it's unclear how key risk indicators will be achieved and to what measures. For instance, how will charges of criminal conduct be reduced? And how will the adequate security of personnel be addressed? Staff is currently being attacked with high caliber assault rifles like AK-47, and there should be a strategy on how these police members will be protected and how effective street survival training currently is. Also, the ineffective financial management is listed as a key enterprise risk. Yet the position of the CFO has been vacant for more than a year. Also, how will civilians be protected in custody? There's also a couple of pieces of legislation that will be reviewed during the 15-16 financial year. The dates on these bills are incorrectly stated as 2014 and should be restated as 2015, as it's not been yet tabled before Parliament. One of these both with animal movements and control bills. It will advise and repeal the Stock Theft Act of 1959. The National Strategic Infrastructure Bill will revise the National Key Point Act. The Firearms Control Amendment Bill will revise the Firearms Amendment Bill of 2006 and also the Firearms Control Act of 2000. And the South African Police Service Amendment Bill, and that will be revised. The court is still based on the 1995 interim constitution and should be aligned to the current constitution. The Honourable Members, I'm just quickly going to give an overview of the 2015-16 budget. I think the Chairperson already alluded to the amounts given to the trust in terms of financial both and transfer. The JPPA for the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cluster is currently receiving 157.5 billion rand, which is 23% of the 279.5 billion national budget. The police post is getting 76.3 billion of this budget, which is 48.5% of the cluster's budget. The next budget to this is the Defense and Military Veterans budget, which is getting 45.5 billion or 28% of the cluster's budget. Honourable Members, looking at the national budget, the police budget is the second largest single budget allocation to any department and is 11% of the national budget. The largest national budget is that of social development, which is 138.1 billion or 20% of the national budget. In terms of the first budget, there is a main appropriation of 76.3 billion, which is a real increase of 371 million or 0.51%. Our members, that means that the subs currently having a holding budget, which means that they receive very little more than inflationary increases. Just to give members some perspective on the amount of money that the police is getting, 1% of the subs budget equals 763 million rand. So if the subs only spends or waste even 1%, we're talking about a very large amount of money. Then also members, just to put into perspective, the civilian security for police is getting 0.14% of the staff's budget, which is very small for institution with very crucial mandates. Also, the IPED is receiving 0.3% of the entire staff's budget, which is also very small for the mandate that the IPED has to do. In terms of ring-fence funding, the appropriations bill only lists 702.2 million rand, ring-fence for infrastructure or the building of police stations, and also 105 million appropriated to the Civilian Secretariat of Police. Our members, it was expected that the Secretariat will receive their first vote this year. However, this didn't pan out as planned, and they are still receiving the budget as being placed within the first budget as sub-program in Program 1 as an instruction. Now, honourable members, looking quickly at the at Program 1, the budget are receiving 16.2 billion rand, which is the second largest allocation to the first vote. It's a 1.4% real increase compared to the 15.3 billion allocation of the previous financial year. The corporate services sub-program received a total of 16 billion of this program's allocation, which is 98% of the entire program budget. Also, looking at the Office of the National Commission at key sub-institutions, the institution's functioning directly under the control of the National Commissioner includes internal audit, residential protection services, corporate communication, crime intelligence, executive support, and legal services. And also, again, the question of the research unit that was originally established under the National Commissioner but is no longer listed as a key sub-institution under that office. A brief overview of the performance indicators. I think the email from the budget office spoke very nicely towards the link between strategic objectives and performance indicators. Several changes were made to the administration program of the department in the 15-16 financial year. There is a new target included which should be welcomed on the percentage of members declared competent in the use of handguns and legal principles. But the committee's question was only handguns and not all the other firearms that are being used by the police. Also, as the performance indicated, to maintain a ratio of not more than 75% to 25% for compensation on operational expenditure has been removed. Which is a concern, as the task is expected to spend almost 80% or close to 80% of the budget on compensation of employees for the 15-16 financial year. The committee should encourage the PEPs to reintroduce the target in order to ensure that the ratio between operational and compensation are really aligned and not out of sync with each other. Also, members, that a new performance indicator has been included for the demographically analyzed police stations, which is aligned to the new resource allocation guideline approach that staff is currently busy with. It should be very interesting to know which stations are being analyzed and how this analysis will be done and which factors will be used to assess these stations. Also, I think it's been quite important that the continuous is a breakdown of the vehicle fleet of the police in order to establish how many active police bands they have in terms of visible policing that communities actually see and feel that vehicles are being used effectively to do visible policing. The incentive for spending on devolved projects has been removed in the 15-16 financial year. The indicator for drafting legislation was replaced with drafting of policies for the police. There was a criticism that the civilian period is supposed to draft the legislation, but they are also mandated to draft policies for the police, and this should be engaged with the department to understand which kind of policies are being referred to here. And then also the four new indicators for the information system or information communication technology should be welcomed by the committee. On the members, looking at the starting plan of the department, the first country has had 198,000 funded positions at the end of the last financial year, which will increase to 198,042 funded positions. It's not a large increase and consistent with the staffing plan of the department to not increase the staffing component any more. On the end of the estimated expenditure for compensation of employees will be 59.8 billion rand of the 15.5 billion total appropriation to the police, which is almost 80% of the budget. It has elicited some questions whether the police is a personnel-heavy department and whether attention should be given to upskilling the personnel that is currently there and not just appoint new people. And I think, apologies, I think the police is currently busy with that strategy, with not employing more personnel. The police also have newly established structures that will be prioritized and capacitated with existing posts. These are the revised cluster framework with 103 positions. It's unsure what the revised cluster framework will entail, and committee members should ask questions around this. Also, the deputy station commander positions will be being capacitated with 100 deputy station commissioners or commanders being appointed. The integrity unit will be capacitated with 50 positions. The research component also with 50 personnel, and then the trial unit with 40 personnel. They also re-enlist the drive to ensure the life skills and specialized environments. One thing that is quite concerning is to accelerate the recruitment process of the staff they entered into a partnership with the SANS to recruit from the military skills program to shorten training, the training program of the staff This recruitment should be unchecked fully, and there is a danger of having military trained personnel incorporated into the civilian police service. The police are trained 89,610 personnel on 424,228 priority courses at the 15-16 financial year. These will include only 150 members in cybercrime, and the bulk of the training will happen within the environment of women, children, and vulnerable groups. Honorable members, it's also important to note that the virtual policing unit has more than half of the staff components of the staff, which is 33.5% of the entire personnel establishment. Honorable members, in terms of the capital works plan of the staff, it has a long-standing concern of the committee for low expenditure and underperformance in delivery of building new stations or upgrading existing stations. 4.3 billion was allocated towards the infrastructure environment, and honorable members on the correction in my document, it said 1.3 billion, which was actually 4.3 billion. Apologies for that. A total amount of 998.7 million has been appropriated towards capital works, of which 687.6 million is towards the Department of Public Works, and 310.8 million to the FAPS. 1.4 billion towards accommodation charges, 1.1 billion towards private leases, and 997 million towards municipal services. The FAPS IPP currently lists 189 capital works projects in the execution phase. These include police station, victim friendly facilities, mobile units, electricity repairs and upgrades, generators, air conditioners, and land acquisition. The remaining concern with the capital works program of the police is that there is no delineated time frames for when projects start and when they end. The problem is that these projects tend to overrun significantly in time frame, which impacts heavily on the cost implications, as building costs escalate quite significantly over time. Also, the SAPS did not respond at all on capital works projects under management of the DPW. It's quite important that SAPS, as the client of DPW, also manages these projects and also report and monitor the progress made on these building projects. There should be also more focus on the on evidence source or fact-related source. As it was last year that the staff indicated that they will develop a uniform standard for how all the fact-related source must look. And it would be interesting if the committee can get more clarity on this and on whether this actually has been developed. Also, honorable members, there are quite significant challenges towards our health facilities at police stations. Most of the valves are not in very good order, and some of the evolution is not working at most stations that the committee has visited. And then it will be important for the committee to establish how many of the 1,130 police stations are currently being privately leased from private owners, leased from the state, and how many are actually owned by the feds. As the police have mentioned previously that they wouldn't want to own their own buildings and not spend enormous amounts of money on leasing either from state or, more importantly, leasing from private owners. The new stations are, the building of new stations should be prioritized up in rural areas, as these areas are definitely struggling with vast distances to get to a fair service point. Honorable members, in terms of the information systems and information and communication technology plan, there are also significant challenges, as committee members are well aware of. The lack of delineated budget for IS and ICT projects has been a long-standing concern. There also has been low expenditure and underperformance on these projects. there is such plan of the SAP focuses on the modernization, implementation and maintenance of several projects, most notably the National Network Modernization Plan, of which the Telkom is now a big partner, and the committee should ask the SAP to unpack the partnership. Now Telkom will be involved in this rollout of the network modernization plan. Also the radio communication modernization, CCTV infrastructure capacity, audio visual capacity of that to have call during the hold from detention centers. The establishment of one network operation center and the restructure and expanding hosting services, and also expand and maintain end-use equipment. The police should be asked to attack all these programs and also engage how the programs are on this program. It's increasingly apparent that the report is having difficulty in spending these funds properly during any given financial year. Even when they are being spent, it's not being spent. And secondly, the results of the system are not apparent, especially at social level, where they are critically needed. The impact and lack of systems within the department has a devastating effect on its ability to manage its own information in terms of the assets that it has and its position, and thus it cannot be expected to make any strategic decision in this regard. And then all members, it will be important for the committee to ask the department when the fruits of the CSIR partnership will be visible by the committee. Honourable members, just on program 2, the Visible Policies, they have been appropriated with 38.8 billion rand, which is the largest allocation of the department, and it forms 50.83% of the total budget. The only received a 0.09% real increase compared to the 37.04 billion allocation of the previous financial year. The crime prevention sub-program received 30.7 billion of this allocation, which is almost 80% of the entire budget. The border security sub-program received only 1.7 billion rand, which is 2.5% of the budget and of the program's budget, which is quite small, especially regarding the importance that the state prison has placed on effective border control. As I said previously, more than half of the department's personnel is employed in this program to a cost of 30.6 billion rand per annum. On the members, looking at the performance indicators, the performance indicator for sessions rendering victim-friendly service, but it has been qualified significantly with all sorts of qualifications that are needed. Although the target is 100%, it should be unpacked fully by the department. There is a split in the recovery of lost and stolen firearms into state-owned and private-owned firearms, which should be welcomed by the committee, but the target of only 24% recovery for state-owned firearms is significantly low. The target for rural safety has been reinstated. There's a new target for school safety plan and should be welcomed, but explained, and what are the outcomes and value added by the program. The very important to the members, the performance indicator for the measurement of the action times, Alpha, Bravo and Charlie complaints has been removed from the APP. The FAT stated that our target is very with the process of developing customized targets for this environment, but the condition urged FAT to retain this target in the interim instead of losing the measurement completely. Also, more focus should be placed on targets for the border security environment. And honourable members, in terms of the public order policing capacitation, the SAP are having real challenges. The National Treasury has rejected the request for additional 3.3 billion rand to capacitate the unit, and the SAP should demonstrate how they are envisaging to capacitate this RIF environment without having the extra money requested. Their vision for Program 3, Detective Services, they have received a 15.8 million rand allocation, which is actually the third largest allocation. However, it received a 0.27% real decrease compared to the previous financial year. The crime investigation sub-program received 10.58 billion of this rand appropriation to the program, which is 98% of the entire program budget. Specialized investigation sub-program received only 1.3 billion rand, which is significantly low if one takes the specialized unit included into the sub-program, which also includes the DPCI. In terms of performance indicators, the targets under the effective investigation of crime lowered and was based on the previous financial year performance. This is linked to what the parliamentary budget office indicated towards. The target should not be based on previous performance, but on the baseline targets. The achievement of the staff in the JCS target should be questioned, especially in terms of commission rates for serious crimes. A recent study published by the South African Institute for Race Relations found that the conviction rate of the department was actually under 22%, which is very low, and that nearly 78% of cases brought to the SAP are rejected by prosecutors based on the lack of evidence. And this comes to the committee's long-standing assertion that the police arrest investigate and must investigate the rape. Our members should also question the effectiveness of detective court case officers on their process of court role and how court cases are presented in court. Also, average fees in serious commercial crimes remains too low. That is despite the in-depth targets that there's a cumulative amount which has been long reached by the staff, but I think it's one target that should be actually overperformed in. Also, members, that quite a big concern in cybercrime. It's estimated that cybercrime is worth $445 billion per year, and it costs the African economy $5.8 billion a year. The staff has indicated a new performance indicator for the investigation of cybercrime, which should be welcome, but the target of an 18% detection rate is far too low and should be increased. Members should also question the capacity of the unit.
Sorry, you collect 5 minutes,
please. Thank you, Chairman. Other members, there's also a lot of concern regarding the DPCI. They are not in line with many budget legislative amendments to the FAPS Act, which states that budget must be ring-fenced. The budget must include a full breakdown of the DPCI budget, and the national head of the directorate must make the presentation to Parliament on the delineated budget of the DPCI. There is also significant challenges towards the migration of cases and personnel to the structure, and the impact of the constitutional court case. Other members, there are 4 new targets for the crime investigation program, which should be welcomed, especially in terms of the DNA intelligence cases. However, the target for all the new developed indicators is quite long and should be unpacked by the police. There is also a question around the status of the MOU with the Department of Health in terms of the toxicology and blood alcohol limits, or tests being referred. And then also the JCPS cluster protocol on toxicology, whether this has been signed. Also, members, in terms of crime intelligence, They received a minor appropriation of 3.1 million rand, which is quite a small percentage of the entire budget. The sub-programs in the program is resourced quite equally. And then, most of what you see here is the intelligence-led policing set it up for RT by the NDSA. And in terms of performance indicators, there's quite significant questions on the inquiry investigations and the long lead time for allegations to be actually verified by the police. There are also a new indicator for ad hoc operations initiated. And there's also quite a significant decrease in crime intelligence reports by the police. Honourable members, just quickly looking at Program 5, it's the smallest portion of the vote. It received a main appropriation of 2.3 billion rand. In terms of the performance indicators, there is a new performance indicator for the protection, the presidential protection unit to evaluate 13 national key points, and the Protection and Security Service to evaluate 191 national key points. It should be asked why the Presidential Protection Service are now evaluating and auditing national key points, and also why the number of national key points are continuously increasing, and then also the retention strategy of VIP protectors and the overtime paid to VIP protectors is also a long-standing component of the committee. Also, specifically in conclusion, the sector has questions and challenges. Most prominent of these challenges are relating to policing smarter in terms of IS and ICT budgets not being spent, and also infrastructure budgets, which is not being spent and the necessary outputs not being received. The prioritization of the criminal justice system modernization is lacking. There is a fear that the tax removal target is not being achieved for two or more years. Also, the alignment of the medium-term strategic framework priorities is lacking in the APP. The priorities listed by the staff, like professionalizing and demilitarization, list a host of activities, but it's not sure how these activities are being measured and what impact it will have on the police. Other members, in conclusion, as we celebrate 20 years of democratic policing in South Africa, the committee should critically evaluate the progress of the staff and the values and money received on the second largest national vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicolette. We will continue ISS and after the poll. Of course, we've got a time limitation in terms of this venue, so we really need to get it out of you. Welcome to Kat Newham from ISS, and then we'll after that take poll. Thank you. The intro piece that's supposed to be an outro, but Chairperson, honourable members, thank you very much for this opportunity of inviting the Institute for Security Studies to give a presentation to the committee today.
We really appreciate the opportunity to engage with you. As you know, the Institute for Security Studies has been tracking crime and criminal justice in South Africa since 1996. And we do ongoing monitoring of police in South Africa, and we look at international trends as well in this regard. So I'm going to start my presentation. What I'm really going to do is talk about some key issues that I think when one talks about policing and its effectiveness, how do you understand it in a democracy? Ultimately, the police are the custodians of the legitimate use of state violence. In other words, they have the right to use force to back up the enforcement of the laws that you as members of Parliament pass. It's a very complex endeavor, but it's a critical one. And the two ways of really understanding of police orientation in democracy is, one is, how does it perform against those violent crimes that cause the most fear and concern society? Because if it's on top of the most violent crimes, then the normal social structures, such as faith-based organizations, local groups, can't mitigate other kinds of social discohesion and instability. So really the police are there to get armed and trained to go after the most violent offenders and make sure they get on top of that as an absolute priority, because everything else becomes somewhat difficult to manage if there's a lot of fear and social implication because of fear of crime. And then secondly, because it's so important that they have legitimacy and public trust, it's about how they behave. It's not just about how well they perform against crime, it's about how do they build trust and support from the public that they're supposed to be protecting and working with. Because even though it's got 198,000 personnel, it can't effectively get the support of 53 million people. It's got to actually focus its policing on those who commit the worst crimes, and in doing so, provide the service that everybody needs in such a way that it builds public trust. And ultimately, this, at the end of the day, is one of the biggest challenges of leadership in a policing agency anywhere in the world. And so we're going to talk about those three issues. What are the current issues around what police support against violent crime? Secondly, what needs to be done to promote public trust? And thirdly, how do we get the kind of, to a point where our police leadership are able to address those two critical components? What we've seen is that we look at violent crime in South Africa. Over half of it is assaults. It's the people that assault each other. Murder about 3%, robberies around 20%, and sexual offences around 10%. That sort of makes up a third of all crime is violent. The crime that the police can best get on top of is aggravated robberies. And the reason is because it's committed by a relatively small number of people who are using force, the threat of force, to steal from others, and they do it over and over again. And when they do it, they also cause other crimes. In other words, they will sometimes kill people, they'll sometimes rape people, they'll sometimes hurt them and injure them and assault them. And then they obviously engage in a whole range of other kinds of crimes. And the more that people who do that get away with this kind of crime, the more organized it gets. And you start to have, so basically what happens is the life of a sophisticated, violent syndicate that deals in car hijackings and crack hijackings, those guys start off on the streets, organized primarily to hold people up and steal the wallets and watch in the cell phone, maybe 50 rand in there. By the time they've done about 100 of those crimes, based on some research and I've met some security prisons of convicted house of robbers, they then start migrating to more organized. The two or three of them start using small spider shops, attacking people in their homes. And they do that for a couple of years, they start moving into more syndicated crime because they're trying to sell goods into these organized networks. And that's what's growing. These networks are making a lot of money because they're selling goods they're paying for, often exporting them outside of the country, and that's what becoming a threat to the nature of the state, because the money they have allows for growth in corruption. They have the money to corrupt police officials, politicians, and like. So it really becomes a serious problem. You've got to start looking at aggravated robbery. And it's one of the most policeable crimes. Now, what struck our attention recently was when the crime stats were released last year, that we saw that for the first time in 20 years, the murder rate had increased for 2 years in a row, and that the rate of increase was increasing. So whereas we had, in the last 20 years, we've seen the murder rate only go up three times, usually a four or five year gap, and we saw a big decrease, overall the murder rate actually dropped by 54% since 1994. So that fundamental shift in murders was something that immediately caught our eye. And it was also accompanied by an increase in attempted murders. So the first question I ask is that if there are 1,450 more murders than 2 years ago, which is four murders more every day on average in South Africa, what is driving this? Because the police can't be responsible for all the kinds of acts that are going to murder. Now, the police in their presentation released crime stats showed that there's domino effect. And they're quite correct in saying that most murders are the outcome of interpersonal violence, people assaulting each other, get out of hand, often alcohol is being used, and that drives most murders. That's correct. However, when we looked at the police trends for assault, we saw that there had been literally a 7% reduction in aggravated assaults over the last 2 years. At the same time, we've seen this big increase in murder. And the same thing with common assault. So two key factors that usually drive murder are going down, but murder going up. So clearly assault is, that raises the question, is assault really going down or is someone else driving murder? Then we looked at the Victims of Crime Survey that released in December last year and saw that since 2011, the proportion of people who say they were being a victim of assault, the proportion who reported that to the police had dropped by around 67%, which is the same proportion of assault being the decreased assault in police statistics. So we're probably not seeing a real reduction in assault. We're seeing assault stabilizing, but fewer people are starting to report these crimes to the police. Of particular concern, and this goes to the public health issue, we've seen a drop of about 8% in those people who say they were victims of robberies reporting to the police. So that only about 32% of people who say they've experienced a robbery in a given year will go to the police and report it. Two-thirds of people who report say they were victims of a robbery did not go to the police to report it. And the drop of numbers of people who say they were victims of sexual assault that were willing to report it to the police dropped by 21% in the last 2 or 3 years. So those are very worrying signs from the Stat of Africa's National Victimization Survey of 30,000 households on people's trust in the police and willingness to report crime. That is the graph there. The only crime in reporting went up was hijackings. But you can see these reductions, and they're quite big reductions. So that catches our eye. People are busy not reporting crimes, which means the crime stats will show decreases in some categories, even if they're not a real decrease. Which means that the police are not, if they're only using crime stats to make a plan, are going to start being misusing their ability to be redirecting resources not to where they need to be. Now, the robberies have been going up. And this is the total robbery rate in South Africa. Big reduction over, but you can see over the last 2 years, we've seen big significant increases. It's actually 18,100 more robberies in last official crime stats compared to 2 years ago. So on average, we're having around 376 armed robberies every single day in South Africa, which is 50 more a day than it was 2 years ago. That's the Gauteng total, which accounts for more than half the robberies. So what you're seeing is that is probably driving the murder rate up. If the assault figures are going down, the same several, but murder going up means that more people are being killed in robberies. And if you read about the newspapers, you'll see that happening. Most of these are street robberies. That affects the poor. Most robberies, almost 70% of robberies take place when people are walking to work or back from work or going to shops or in the streets. That is the bulk of the robbery victims in South Africa. Followed by house robberies, then by business robberies, then by car hijackings. These are more organized robberies. So these guys do this for a long time and start getting involved in this, and then they start becoming, if they have the skill, the capacity, and networks, become the elite robbers who use AK-47s to hold a credit transit heist, in the bank robberies, that kind of thing. And they will be a severe danger to the police. Now, the robberies going up, those reverse house robberies. And we can see this from other data. I mean, the robberies of shopping centers, to give you a sense of how organized the police getting up, has gone up by 142%. Since 2011-12. So with armed robberies, this is from the Consumer Goods Council Risk Information Center initiative, 274 armed attacks against shopping malls in 2011-12. Last year, 665 armed attacks against shopping centers. Those are guys who have been committing lots of other robberies and more confident are using automatic weapons. And then fabric, you can see there, cash and card is going up, but robbery related to bank activity is going up as well. So we have a serious robbery problem, and it's been going on for the last 2 years. Now, this is the one crime you know the police can get on top of. I was fortunate enough to be working as a special project manager at the Gauteng MEC in between 2006 and 2009 when we started to see increase in robberies. We did research internationally. We looked at places like Colombia, New York, and a range of other countries. Where they've been, we see big reductions in robberies over 5 to 9 years. So such as Colombia, 5 years, managed to reduce its robbery rate by 75%. So it actually got its robbery down to 1/4 of what its robbery was in 9 years. Without hiring a single additional police officer. But their arrest rates for robbery perpetrators quintupled. They went up 500%. We started looking at what the principles and practices, and then started engaging with the police service. They really had a good experience in Operation Gem in 2003, where 250 officers in 7 task teams brought hijackings down by 56% in 2 years. Because they were focused, and that's what specialized detective work to back up our intelligence. But how did everybody robbery try to emulate this? And really, to keep it very brief in fact, A crime management center is established at the prevention headquarters in town. There's 15 members working full-time, which, with 30 minutes of a police station anywhere in Khartoum receiving in case of a tier robbery, house robbery, business robbery, or carjacking, we reported to the crime management center. There'd be careful deployment of high-speed, rapid reaction units, 10-4-1 vehicles, flying squad. The strategic areas based on analysis of these robberies taking place, so they could try and catch you guys as they're fleeing the scene. You don't rush to the scene of the crime, because that's where the robbers aren't, if the victim's phoning you, but you do see them and they're hitting arterial routes, and so you're trying to get to arrest rates up. When you arrest them, 4 intelligence profiles, and you establish 22 specialized investigative units, each of them linked to a cluster in Gauteng. So this strategy, out of 36,000 police personnel that were available to Gauteng, only used 461 police officers, of which 421 of 360 were detectives. So you're talking about smart policing. These guys, so less than 500 police officers of different capacities, working together, using crime intelligence effectively, and rapid response, and being supported by forensics. In other words, 99% of crime scenes are dependent on forensics, and in 50% of the time, they got forensic evidence that could have linked, eventually, 3,000 perpetrators to robberies across Gauteng. Okay. This all took place literally in 7 months of starting actually implementing the strategy in January of 2009. It was adopted in June 2008, took 6 months to get the structures up and running, and they started moving. The impact was 100% increase in the arrest rates of people committing these robberies in the first 3 months. Ultimately, we saw big increases, double-digit increases in the conviction rates. And if you look at when the strategy was started to when it was abandoned in early 2011, we saw big reductions, 21% reduction in house robberies, almost 20% reduction in burglary robberies, and a 52% reduction in hijackings in 2 years, using 461 police personnel out of 36,000 that are available to help them. Okay. The strategy was then abandoned, and a new strategy was put in place to find police everything again, and what do we see? All the crime starting to go. So we have the people. We have the technology, we have the experience in the South African police service today. Those cops who did that are still there. We can get on top of the crime. Okay. I don't spend too much time on this stuff, but basically, if you look at the various performance indicators, you suddenly see there doesn't seem much of a coherent and strategic approach to a specific crime. The list of crimes, everything's been policed in some way or another, and it's difficult to understand the specific policing activities and how they will impact on those specific crimes. You see, you can see legal roadblocks and cordons, a general downward trend in time when we saw increased numbers. However, the arrest rates will continue to go up. So you've got people being searched, people being searched, so it's less focused, less targeted, but big numbers. There's big increases in rural policing. There's a lot of cops out there doing stuff that's not focused on a good security strategy. We're seeing lots of people being searched, 20 million a year. And then we see 1.5 or 1.7 in Russia. The latest end report gives two figures for the total arrest rate, 1.2 million and 1.3 million. But you can see the conviction rates and the closure rates in the NPA, largely down a trend. So there's a lot of coherence, not only with the police, but between police and the NPA. Okay, that's sort of a clear thing. Now, one of the big concerns to us is because if you don't have information analysis, the police can't use the resources in a targeted and effective way. So this crime intelligence report from the report for the last 3 years is worrying. On virtually every component except in the visual profile, we're seeing double-digit reductions in the numbers and percentages of the numbers of outputs. They're almost halved, most of the key important things, which means that as the crime intelligence division is slowly deteriorating, it's not providing the kinds of guidance based on hard evidence and hard information that the reaction teams, the policing, and the detective use to go after people committing most of the serious violent crime that is causing severe murder in South Africa. So that has to be looked at. This should be an absolute critical priority. And it really needs to be stabilized as soon as possible. Okay, so from our perspective, the portfolio committee, you really want to ask police, look, what is your strategy on dealing with robberies to ensure the increased arrest rates and conviction of perpetrators? And believe me, I'm very happy to give the portfolio committee the targeting strategy and the evaluation of the strategy so you can compare that strategy with what the police have. Because it's a strategy that works. You can see they're doing the same things. And also, obviously, how will its impact be assessed and by whom? The assessment of the Gauteng police was done by the provincial Gauteng Department of Community Safety. So it was an arm's length, it was its own assessment. So it could assess that the things were working and not working. Similarly, when you're talking about services about key crimes such as murder, rape, and corruption, you want similar strategies. The police really must know which key personnel are doing what kind of work and what functions are involved and how do you pull that together. Okay, so that's that about the performance. I will stop there. And I'll give you the time. Just on issue of conduct, I presented a slide last year in July, but it's actually critical. If you want crime to be the police, whether it's really mobilize communities, work communities, and there's a quote, making both the style and substance of police practices more legitimate in the eyes of the public, particularly high-risk juveniles, mostly young men, may be one of the most effective long-term policing strategies for crime prevention. It's mostly young men commit most of the violent crimes, mostly young men are the victims of most violent crimes, and the police need to be able to work with them in a constructive way and have legitimacy in their eyes. And that just means being professional and adhering to the rules, being somebody that the public trusts and wants to go to if there's a problem that they can solve. Okay. Well, what you're seeing is the IPID reports are showing, in one way, a welcome reduction in number of reporting assault cases, number of people dying in police custody, all very welcomed. But what we're also seeing is this big increase in civil claims. And we do need to start understanding, is the reduction in complaints to the IPID around cases like assault? Of course, the deaths can be a good measure, but assault and other kinds of claims, are those a true reflection? Because the amounts that the police are paying out is escalating. Now, this is not the total civil litigation that they're facing in terms of the total number of cases. This is what the courts have considered as evidence and then ordered the police to pay out. So I'm reading those figures. And you can see here, that's between 2010 to 2012, increased by 33%, but in the next 2 years, increased by 137%. So it went up from 105 million rand to 251 million rand. After the courts look at the evidence carefully and say, these police officers are wrong, they assault this person illegally, arrest this person illegally, wrong for shootings. So it does bring the question whether people are moving away from reporting to IPID where they think they might not get any justice and actually going towards the courts because they might get a payout. Okay, and then if you just look at the last year, you know, 11 assaults they reported to the IPID. The Human Science Research Council, Social Attitude Survey says 66% of the adult population think that corruption is a widespread problem in the police, with less than half, 41% saying they had any level of trust in the police. Most recent speech fact survey saying that 3/4 of South Africans believe the police, there are a lot of criminals in their ranks, and 1/3 saying they're scared the police would not go to police station report crimes. Those are key indicators that I would imagine any police strategy would have to deal with. How do you build public trust? You need to recognize that there's a problem in the first place. And of course, when you're going to, what is your focus? I mean, really, it is about the way the code of conduct and the values of South African Police Service. Very clearly spells out all police officials' families. It's clearly mentioned the National Data Plan. And it says, for instance, any breach of this code should be dealt with by the disciplinary system. And there should also be linked rewards and promotions. So then you give a police officer a reward, an official reward ceremony. You say, because you have this man or woman in the police officer, adheres to the following values, and this is how we know. So that you constantly reinforcing positive values that many police officials do hold dear and using this police system to get rid of those or not. So we really would say that that doesn't seem to be happening. I mean, if you look at the most recent disciplinary charges prosecuted in 2013-2014, only 2.2% of them related to the South African Police Service Code of Conduct. The rest are related to a whole lot of other issues. And they didn't really use, so it's not being integrated into the disciplinary system as yet. And I think those are the kinds of areas that the committee needs to focus on. Well, how are you making sure that you're using the codes to reward good policing and hold those who are bad policing in account? Okay, then once again, indicators for assessing that. I won't miss you to go through these, but you'll read them in my presentation. So there are some very key indicators you can actually look for, such as the number of complaints, about the busy of people to complain against the police, the number of complaints each year, the breakdown of the major complaints, criminal versus service delivery, how long does it take to investigate and decide to prosecute, and the profiles of the police officials and stations where these complaints are lodged. The issue of impunity is big in the South African Police Service. Too many police officials who do wrong things are getting away with it. And that undermines the morale and the motivation of those many good, honest, hard-working men and women. And you can just see this here, that out of the 6,000 hearings that were held last year, almost 40% end in no verdict, no sanction. They're either withdrawn or the person is acquitted. So for some reason, the ability for the police to say there's enough evidence to prosecute a disciplinary hearing, which is quite a resource-intensive process. You've got a presiding officer, you've got recording equipment, you've got to allow them to emerge, there's got to be somebody who's got to prosecute a case. After that, almost 20% of the time, nothing happens. The case gets withdrawn and there's acquittal. Whereas only 9% end in the dismissal. So there were 537 dismissals. In other words, hearings that ended with a recommendation of dismissal, but if you look into the table which says how do people leave the police service, only 126, or 1 in 4, of the hearings that it ended in a recommendation of a dismissal police officer because they committed such serious misconduct that they're undermining the police force. Only 1 in 4 actually get removed from the police force. So the question should be asked about what happens to those others? Why do they remain there? Why are there so many 664 suspended dismissals? In other words, presiding officer looking at the evidence says this person is not even fit to be in the organization, they're a threat to the public, they must be dismissed, but they stay there. What is that about? Okay, and then I'm going to once again lead the South African anti-corruption strategy. It's a very clear outcome. That's something I think the committee wants us feedback on. And then it is funny, so there's some time questions if there are any. We really need to look at the national development plans, options for improving leadership. It's not about having a single person at the top of the organization to fix everything. It's about having a highly skilled, highly experienced senior management team. There's about 27 senior top managers, and there's about another 450 senior managers. Those people have to be role models for all 198,000 police officers. When they see a person wearing these racks on their shoulder, they must be proud of those people. They must look up to them, have trust in them. A recent study done by the Australian Institute for Police Management of 53 very well studied issues around police management found 7 key criteria for police leadership. And very briefly, they must be ethical. They must be seen to be somebody who is ethical and beyond reproach. They must be role models to everybody in the organization. Good communicators, critically creative thinkers, not just good decision makers. How do they make decisions? Do they involve everybody in the police community, the external stakeholders? Are they trustworthy? And finally, do they obviously be legitimate in both the eyes of the police officials that need to be led by them and by the public? And I think if you look at the sort of foundation of the National Development Plans, recommendations, the establishment of a policing board to set objective standards for recruitment, selection, appointment, and promotion, we believe that such a board should be led by a judge, maybe no more than 7 people who have good experience in executive, public, or private management, to hold the process to make sure that everybody gets appointed there is able to hold the post that they hold. During the evaluation of the top 27 and then everybody from a brigadier upwards, against the criteria of the post that they hold, if they do not have the necessary integrity or skills and experience to hold their posts, redeploy them to the organization where they can better serve the organization with the skills they do have, and open each of those posts to a transparent and competitive process. Then you'll start seeing, because we believe we have really good people in the police service, you know we do, at all levels, the situation right now is we've got some of the best minders sitting at cluster level, at station level. They should be able to get to those top posts because of their integrity, their willingness to serve the communities, their willingness to bring professional service to the South African people. So I'm in there, and thank you very much for your time and patience.
Thank you very much. Are we going to break for an early tea, just 10 minutes, and then we will come back. Right, thanks. 10 minutes.
You get one figure of how many count robberies there were per day. People a day. Oh, 50 years. See, this is blind. Now, it's very interesting to tie in because look at your aggregated robberies. Shall we say, how many do you say a day? Per annum. And if you think we're now up to 47 murders a day, and you divide it up, those figures are way too, and you really hit them out of the head. And all they're doing is holding car blocks in the evening context. So everybody hates the police because they're just waiting for an hour after a 9-day, a 9-hour day at work. You know what she said. She dropped the educational qualifications for provincial intelligence head to a matric. So no longer have to have a degree, no longer have to have any experience. Highly technical, qualified, and need a background. No, she couldn't get her thumbs in, so we just got out. She was just sitting there. I can do a lot. Well, actually, you can't, lady. playing games.
Are you around?
Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue our hearing. We're honoured to have the Fofgroep General Secretary. Welcome to Mr. Nkosinathi Mfleri. Welcome to him. He's going to be the next presenter. Then we will take Sopo after that, and then we will open up for questions. And after that, we will take the other presentation. So, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And now our revolutionary greetings.
Sorry, just over there, please. We want to continue the next event. Thank you.
We are pleased that the committee afforded us an opportunity to demo the submission as we will be doing from now. We're going straight to the submission on the starting with the resources. The budget under review clearly increased by March 2014, there were 1,138 police stations, but there's no indication in terms of the allocation of the location of this station. It could have been more of value if the breakdown of localities were mentioned for proper monitoring and so on. It has been mentioned again that over the medium term, the bulk of the department's infrastructure budget will go towards upgrading the existing police stations and constructing new ones. Further to that, there's a statement which refers to constructing additional 6 rural police stations and upgrading of 18 by 2017-18. The department should provide the specifications on this two statements that we would want to conclude that they will be only constructing the set or as per the statement. Because if the then their budget will be unreasonable and necessitate my review in one way or another. The budget model also specifies that the department is aiming to ensure that all police stations have victim-friendly infrastructure, most specifically for victims of traumatic crimes such as rape, sexual offences and abuse. We welcome this initiative. And we further urge the department to put more focus on the previously disadvantaged communities, as we are all aware that most police stations in these areas are operating under undesirable conditions. Adding to this, the request to the department to allocate key resources such as vehicles where they are seriously needed. A situation where a lot of vehicles are in aerospace space and less stations is unattractive and detrimental. This will obviously impact negatively on service delivery. The department anticipates on implementing the minimum criteria of rural safety strategy by 2017-18 financial year in all 882 rural police stations. There is a mention of enhancing partnership policing and encourage community participation. They will continue to ensure that all police stations implement sector policing and have functioning community policing forums. This should be unpacked on the how part of this statement and also include target dates with a clear indication of how they of the intention to transform the non-functional CPFs into functional forums. A sufficient budget obviously is needed to enhance the effectiveness of these forums. We are in disagreement though with the statement stating that by the end of March 2014, 90% of the police stations were implementing sector policing and had functioning community policing forums. This is, might be misleading because taking cognizance of the fact that implementation of sector policing and CPFs in rural areas is still a mammoth task to discharge. Now, the police stations are key service delivery points for the public service. We therefore recommend that resources must be allocated to police stations based on real needs. To address the issue of equitable allocation of resources, it's of important significant value that communities in rural areas must receive the same type of policing provided in other cities. The NDP points out that a military police force or a military force can be reconciled with the public service such as the police. We are all aware that the fact that the role of the military is to overpower and destroy an enemy. And therefore, kind of the police service obviously within the same caliber. The Constitution stipulates that the Minister of South African Police Service must promote good relations between the community and the police, and that the police service must protect the people. As such, the militarization undoubtedly will undermine the provisions which were envisaged in 1994. Coming to the police change, the attacks and killings of men and women in blue remains a big concern. An attack on a police officer is an attack obviously on the entire nation. Hence, there's a dire need for a collaborative intervention between the community, the police, and civil society to eradicate this disease. The department should try to improve the training on self-defense mechanisms, provide police officers with relevant protective equipment to augment the protection of its members. Quite important, it's a grave concern with the number of officers committing suicide. And there should be some answers in this regard on the support of our two members of, after traumatic events. There should be progress provided on a program of action developed by the department during the conference on police suicides. We would also like to highlight the fact that the currently existing employee health awareness programs are ineffective. And our recommendation is that it should be properly capacitated. This program should be properly capacitated to meet the required needs of the officers. And this is the kind of service, this kind of service being made available at the station level where it's mostly needed, not in head office or at the provincial level. About that, we call the extreme harsh sentencing of perpetrators found guilty of maiming those who should be protecting all South Africans. The department currently doesn't have a promotion policy since 2005, and this has resulted in a huge backlog on the middle management and junior ranks being deprived, which deprives the individuals for upward mobility in terms of promotion. As a result, members spend approximately 10 to 15 years of their careers in one rank, and the reintroduction of the ranks in 2010 resulted in a serious challenge as the department introduced them without a proper criteria. A new promotion policy was then inserted to the service as a signed agreement in order to ease challenges of within the department. Amongst others, the agreement was signed mainly aimed at ensuring fair and equitable promotion amongst all employees and members across all levels within the department. The agreement also addressed the backlog of approximately 45,000 inspectors who were stuck for more than 20 to 30 years in the same rank without promotion. Now, we tackle the issue of promotion in four parts. Part A, which was meant to introduce the positions of lieutenant and major ranks, and this process was supposed to be implemented within a 24-month period, which was principled by once off promotion in 2011-2012, 2013-2013 final year. It was therefore implemented. Part B, on this phase, we welcome the court judgment on the 2nd of April 2015 on Resolution 2 of 2011, which by solidarity is aimed at attacking the transformation agenda within the entire public service. Nevertheless, we still have a challenge on implementation and backlog on level 7. Inspectors probably missed approximately 56,000 who qualified 10 years ago, but there's still no progress in terms of their promotion. Performance management tool for senior managers, directors upwards, is also not properly implemented. We therefore call for an accelerated process to balance this backlog at the interdict has already been won against solidarity with the court judgment last week. We urge the department to handle this long overdue matter with a sense of sensitivity, and this is demoralizing to the dedicated members. Once presented in this committee in 2012, a new compensation model must be developed to accommodate the new ranks as well as promotion policy. That is, and the department indicated that it could not be implemented at the time due to financial difficulties. There's a need for progress in this regard. The last part is the grade progression was also made part of the this promotion policy of the agreement, which will be utilized for the lower ranks so that constables and sergeants can be able to progress financially through the salary levels in the absence of a post secure financial growth or affordability. This was partially implemented in 2022, but today the majority of sergeants are still not very progressed, albeit a statement made by the in 2014 in terms of addressing this matter. It's significant for the department to implement this policy in a manner in which it has been crafted. This will assist the department in ensuring that there's consistency in promotion and grade progression. This promotion did not make any impact as such in clearing the blockages, as the department is still experiencing challenges with proper implementation of this policy due to unavailability of a revised service structure. We therefore strongly believe that more needs to be done in terms of ensuring that members move who have been loyal to the service can be fairly moved upwards. And we make a number of recommendations in that regard. Above all, despite all these challenges, we find it crucial for the department to improve the conditions of service for these men and women in blue, for them to be remunerated in a manner that boosts their morale and instills a sense of dignity whilst they execute their duties of protecting South Africans, all South Africans. Coming to the organizational structure, I would like to acknowledge the fact that little has happened in terms of reducing the top structure of the police reducing it to the number of deputy commissioners from 6 to 3. We are of the opinion that this was just a starting point. We expect much more reduction, as there are still many more senior positions created at the pinnacle of the structure, at the level of the DBGs or deputy or divisional commissioners, of which we believe most of these positions are a duplication of services with adverse effects on the budget. Each of these senior officers got a salary of approximately 1.5 million per annum from the budget, and below each of them, there are a number of chief directors and a lot of directors in the form of, over and above these positions, there are about 13 divisional commissioners and 9 commissioners. From all these at the level of DPGC. Our submission is that the department would and should do much better with a lean and mean top structure, with bigger personnel where the actual work takes place for proper delivery of the required services on the ground. We have tabled this submission, to this committee more than 5 years ago, and we are submitting it once again, because this bloated structure has adverse effects on the department's prospects of adequately to employ and distribute sufficient personnel at the station level where person power is really needed. The current top structure should be downsized, and this can only be achieved if the department can make some components that render similar services. It's certain that some of the components within the department are in mere duplication in terms of functions, and we propose that such components be merged as a way of reducing the unnecessary top heavy that consumed a lot of budget. Human resource management and human resource development should be merged and form one component headed by one divisional commissioner. And likewise, on other components as well, which are similar in terms of functioning operation. This will certainly save the department a huge amount of funds that can be utilized for better purpose that will impact positively towards the fighter king's fight. As we previously indicated during the discussions of this nature, it's our view that the leadership of SAFS must ensure that sufficient funds are invested in the field of training and development of officers at all levels. We need to have sufficiently skilled and properly trained officers to be entrusted on a continual basis, to be entrusted with the responsibility of making sure that those who are in conflict with the law are taken care of within the relevant districts instead of allocating a bigger chunk of the budget, as you said, on the top of the structure. Restructuring service is necessary as a way forward to better policing and improve service, using the local police stations as the crucible of such service. The revised strategy should incorporate advantages of decentralization of work and authority, along with specialized skills that will be available at station level where real work of the policing is happening. The focus of structuring should be directed towards reducing the provincial and national structures and completely dissolve the clusters in order to improve coordination and the provision of functional policing and the support service, redeployment to station level of certain specialized operational policing functions to ensure crimes are investigated where they occur immediately. Civilian Secretariat, we have noted the escalating underpinning, and adding to that, the department has made most of their target due to issues related to this establishment. These two raised points have an adverse impact on the operations of the Secretariat. We therefore call for a speedy finalization of all the procedures related to the independency of the discovery. This will ensure that Secretariat effectively renders its oversight function. IPIT welcome the concept of improving the quality of training for the investigators to surely play a greater role in the fight against crime. On the other hand, we have learned in this way that the IPIT is failing to fill in funded positions. This is compromising, obviously, the service delivery, and therefore, as that this matter should get attention. This year, the challenges within the private security industry have manifested themselves in many ways, which includes non-compliance and lack of proper control. As a result, we call on that legislation which is in abeyance, which is threatened this court case, to be signed off into law. As it said, despite those threats, let it be signed into law. In conclusion, Chairperson, we conclude by pointing out the fact that bringing criminals to justice is not solely dependent on the police. We therefore submit that the integration of the department in the criminal justice should be a top priority in the fight against crime. Beyond safety, using an integrated approach requires a focused approach to the causes of crime. It requires active citizenship and the mobilization of all levels of state and non-state capacities and resources at all levels. It is therefore crucial and valuable that we continue working together in the fight against crime and to create safer communities.
Thank you very much to the Secretary General of Portland, Mr. Lady, for your contribution. We are looking forward to these action and question time. Yes, Shaobu. Welcome to Mr. Mko Mpininka. You must correct me.
Yes, right.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes.
Welcome, and over to you.
Thank you. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues from Parliament's Budget Office and Research Unit, ISS, everyone present here this morning. We are very excited to form part of you in the discussion of Budget Vote 23 of the police. But before we even start with this, as a South African Policing Union, we'll ask our sincere and heartfelt condolences to the men and women in blue who continue to be killed in their quest to make our lives safe and secure. Honorable Chief, as an organization, SAPO supports the endeavors by the authorities to increase the ever needed resources to enable the staff to fulfill its mandate of fighting crime. Having said this, where there are challenges, we shall not hesitate to raise them with the relevant authority. We shall constructively engage authorities in order to bring the issues to their attention to elicit the necessary corrections. On the issues of crime, Honorable Chair, allow me to point out that our organization is observing an unprecedented practice where the commitment to reduce crime lacks some visible commitment. Instead of planning to reduce crime, as it has always been the norm, the staff seems to be planning to have increase in crime. Mm-hmm. On this point, one can look at Table 23.1 that deals with selected performance. We note that last year, the staff tabled the plan promising that by the year 2015-2016, it shall reduce serious crime by 2% to 1,683,827. Now, the staff suggests that it was incorrect to make such commitment to the nation, and it plans to have serious crime reduced to 1,790,428 in 2015-2016. This is, in reality, an increase by 106,601 cases that represent an increase of 6.3 as compared to the figure promised last year. With regard to the detective service program, last year it has committed itself to crime detection rate of serious crime to 44% in 2015-2016. Now, the staff is making an about 10 and the plan to achieve the detection rate of 41% in 2015-2016. This is, in essence, a shift in plan to perform 3% less than the target set last year. Furthermore, the staff promised the public that it plans to achieve 78.89% trial ready case docket in 2015-2016. Now it plans to achieve 69.04% trial-ready docket in 2015-2016. This is a plan to reduce the target set last year by 10%, a matter that is of grave concern. We have the view that the reduction of targets will not instill confidence in the communities that we serve. We further believe that organized crime and corruption should feature prominently in the plan. I want to take you back on the 12th of July 2012. The National Commissioner had indicated to the public that an internal unit that is going to deal with the issue of corruption is going to be formed. To date, such a unit hasn't been formed. If we are serious about fighting crime and corruption in particular, we need to get stuck to the promises that were made to the public. On the issue of professionalization of the staff, we appreciate and support commitment by the staff to professionalize the police. In fact, this was our South African Policing Union team, CEC 2012, and the National Congress of the South African Policing Union adopted again this theme, because we felt that this is an ongoing thing and should not be abandoned up until we realize this. We have to caution that this commitment must be followed by action. A promise to target graduates in recruitment will go a long way in selecting the final cream of recruits. However, we need to guard against sending conflicting messages by reducing the requirements for appointment in top positions to grade 12, a requirement that is equally required for an administrative class. We have observed this in the filling of the post of Richard Crime Intelligence on Major General Grant. And we strongly believe that this is obvious. Over and above, we have observed a trend where senior management such as SMS posts are not advertised as required. Many posts, including divisional commissioners, provincial commissioners, and component heads, were filled in this current financial year through Regulation 45, Subsection 9 of the South African Police Service Employment Regulation of 2008. This provision has never been intended to be a general norm, but it is supposed to be deployed in exceptional circumstances. As a result of this method of filling the post, many potential candidates are not given an equal opportunity to compete for this position. This is not in the interest of the service. It creates more despair to committed members who may not be known by those who are doing headhunting. Headhunting is a recipe for an unholy allegiance on the part of the hunter and the hunted. It is even more concerning to note that a critical post of a Divisional Commissioner of Finance and Administration, which is vacant and funded, has not been filled since the 1st of September 2013. I think this was reflected by the Parliament Budget Office, what I'm referring to now here. It is against a code of good governance. You cannot leave a post, employ a person on a higher position, but still allow that person to oversee that department. You are now opening up a gap, or even a more reason for corruption to take place in that environment. Isn't it that when you leave a post, you have to give in a hand over certificate to say, I have left this department in good standing. And then you move on, you leave that department. Whoever comes in, they found something wrong, they must be able to report those issues. That is when we are serious about fighting corruption within the South African police environment. Professionalism is underpinned by discipline, which is based amongst us on respect for seniority. We have entered an era where our top management is erroneously believing that there is no seniority amongst managers. Our thoughts as a police officer, and a commissioned police officer for that matter, that the effort that I put on my shoulders is the powers of the president conferred upon me by the president. So if one of the senior officers who are supposed to be holding this thing, you hear them making comments like, you know, this means nothing. This means nothing to me, it means a lot. Because it's the power, the authority that is conferred to me by the state president of the country. The other issue that is so worrying, it is the issue of top 1,500. This group of officers are moving from one province to another. They are being transported by the state. They are being housed by the state. This kind of arrangement is a very costly arrangement. In the report that we heard from the parliamentary budget office as well, is that 80% of our budget, the pre-budget, is being utilized on human resources. If we can review this, because I don't think we need 1,500 people to leave. The National Commissioner, the Deputy, the Divisional Commissioners, and the Profcoms, these are top senior management of the police who can make very valuable decisions in policy. And then allow the rest of the people, the so-called command and control, which deals with the issues of seniority as well, and respect and discipline as well, to reign in this environment. We are not going to be able to produce best leadership in future if we continue to do this. On the rank levels of Lieutenant General, appointed as Deputy National Commissioner, Lieutenant General, appointed as IFCO, Lieutenant General, appointed as PROFCO. Lieutenant General as a rank, it does not exist. There is no such a rank. It is a Lieutenant General attached to a division. It is a Lieutenant General attached to a provincial office. It is a Lieutenant General that is attached to the Deputy National Commission. We see in the structure that the police has, which in fact, I will ask the chairperson, the Honorable Chair, to really look at the structure. Because this structure, we don't believe that this structure has been in existence when restructuring took place on the 31st of August 2013. Mm. That is why you will see on it, there is a stamp of the head of DNC Corporate Service Management. By that time, we didn't have such a portfolio in the police. If you look into this structure, you will see that right within the office of the National Commissioner, you have got a Lieutenant General, who is not a DNC, who is not a PROFCOM, who is also not even a divisional commissioner. So what kind of a rank is this? It's sitting right in here. If we start scrutinizing, it is for this reason that in our previous presentation, we requested that the police provide the organizational design so that all of us will be able to make meaningful input into this structure. The Honorable Chair will recall that what Pop has been saying about the police top structure being the top busy, it is something that we discussed here on the 23rd of March 2012. But if you look at the structure today, it's even more bloated than declaring it. It's not come down. It is these issues which have been kept in the dark and we are not having access to this document. This is a public document. After the police have approved this structure, it should be placed in a public environment that we can gain access to it.
I call for anything else to quote up all the medals.
Mickey Mouse medals.
This has also seen two senior managers being retrenched against the existing total of in the past. I think this one, it will be very interesting for all of us to watch it as it unfolds. Because if you go back again and look at the very same structure again, the one that I said the portfolio committee must go and have a look at it, you will see that it is marked there as head first research, and I had the Parliament Budget Office. They were reporting about this. And I wonder as to how did this structure go past the DPSA Department, International Treasure. I don't think that if it was in the place before that, it will really go through there. We don't know. discipline has to be sustained. Regulation 8 of the South African Police Service Regulations 1964 must be respected to the last. If we need to resume that regulation, let the process unfold and review the regulations. But as it stands, that is the regulations that regulate discipline within the police service. The changes which were made by the minister in April 2010, that structure is a structure which must be maintained at all times until reviewed by the minister. Currently, that structure is not reviewed, but we see lots of appointments are taking place outside that establishment. Lots of appointments are taking place outside that ministry. As I go to conclusion, Honorable Chair, there is one thing here which is bothering. It is the issue of liability, police liability towards HR issues. People have reported about the decision of the court second of this month. Yes. There are liabilities there. Those members were pronounced officers on the 20th of February 2012. Am I correct? 2012. And then a review of that decision was made thereafter, and then the whole agreement to Stroke 2011 was then taken on the review. That does not take away the police liability that those people are officers. It does not take, it does not remove. But if you look at this budget, we search everywhere here, we don't see any provision made to cater for such liability. That is when issues like salary progression, constables who over a period of time, today are standing at 30,000. They are waiting to be salary graded. But the employer says, we don't have money. But these have been taking place. If you look at this number, they're growing every year. And we are not doing anything to mitigate these numbers. Who is supposed to be mitigating these numbers? Who is supposed to be looking after the liabilities that I'm referring to in terms of compensation towards HR? It is us as management. We have a responsibility to make sure that this thing happens. Otherwise, we will continue and have a very unhappy police force who will contribute very negatively, and I'm not saying this is the case. I'm just saying that an unhappy police force will give you an unhappy result. Honorable Chair and honorable members, let me conclude by saying that our organization shall continue to constructively engage management to ensure that the staff does not fail in its constitutional obligation of ensuring safety and security to all inhabitants of our country. When we criticize, it's not because we are under-revolutionary. If we criticize, it is because we want what is good for South Africa. And that is the only contribution which we can make, I think.
Thank you very much. We will, from now on, take questions from members on the issues raised, and after that we'll go to the other presenters and also do a panel. So that is going to be our approach. Maybe the first question from my side.
From the very beginning. All the presentations.
Yes, all the presentations. Yes. Maybe the question of leadership. I think at the beginning of the proceedings this morning I indicated that where's the portfolio committee is going to specifically look at leadership. The IS is in their presentation, the second last slide. They also indicated the question of organizational culture, civil crisis of top management. Now my question is, moving into the NDP era and also the submissions you made regarding competency assessment, recruitment, and maybe looking at international examples, the top management of police, and I know it's a difficult debate, but should that be persons from within the police or civilians from outside? What is the best really approach in ensuring that we move towards that approach. Then in terms of, I think Pop Crew raised also the issue of the daily management. We had the portfolio committee raised that in August, September last year with the national management. We're not in agreement. Maybe, what is the proposals maybe from the unions? What would be your ideal top management structure? Are you talking about a national commission, three deputy national commissioners? I just want to get, you know, your perspective or motivation. What would be, in your mind, be, in terms of crime fighting, to be the best structure to deal with the current challenges? Right, let's go to the honourable members. Honourable Krulov.
Okay.
Honourable Kalabana. Honourable Molabashi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My second question goes to Mr. Nuhet. I heard you mention the right to use force in your introduction. Now, can you explain to me to what extent do that right go? You know, why I'm saying that is most of the time when I listen to you, you know I know you from that long. Most of the time when I listen to you, you sort of criticize this very right you're talking of. Now, can you tell me to what extent can this right of force to use for school? My next one is to about this the respect. This deputy station commander, in your view, you see this structure as another toothless structure or do you see it as a real structure that will function? Thanks, sir. I'll come back.
Honourable Marbija, yes.
First, just a question to Sapu. I see here that you raised a problem of lieutenants that are being appointed, whereas that regulation has been abolished. And again, you made mention of senior managers being retained against a certain protocol of SAP. Now, my question is, when all of this happened, did you attempt to discuss this with the relevant people? So that as the portfolio committee, we be in a position to understand the whole situation because we are not there. And we are not there, we are getting it from you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bela.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have three questions. Can I ask all of you now for other questions? My first question, just a short one to the colleagues from the Parliamentary Budget Office, is there was a very good statement that was made in the presentation, which echoed something that I think the whole committee has seen in the past year, which was there was a bullet point that said that the departments have the ability to spend. And I think that's something that the committee has seen, certainly with the previous reporting period, the department has reported nearly 100% expenditure. The curious thing happens when we start looking at meeting targets, performance targets, and especially when the committee has done oversight visits on the ground. The reality on the ground at the police station level shows all kinds of shortages, personnel, equipment, infrastructure. So something is happening between the high level stuff where you see the second biggest allocation in the national budgets. At the high level, seemingly being spent nearly to 100%, but it's not trickling down to the ground in the way that it should have that kind of impact. Was there anything in the analysis you've done which indicates what is happening in the middle, with those flows from the top to the bottom, where the two just don't seem to match. Our second question is to the committee's researcher in terms of the civilian secretariats. Now, that's something I also noticed in the the budget after the finance minister delivered his speech, that the civilian secretariat was not a separate vote in this financial year. And I just wanted to know, do we have any official explanation or reason why that is not the case yet, especially in light of the fact that the civilian secretariat did become a designated department from April last year, which was a fact that the national management was voting about and saying we're moving in the right direction in this regard. So I don't understand why we don't have that separate vote for 15-16 when in 2014 already structurally it became that designated department. And then my third question is to Mr. Newman. In terms of the, I was very interested in the parts of the presentation about the Gauteng aggravated robbery strategy and the successes it had over the time it was being implemented. And you mentioned the time period that you were attached to the MEC's office to assist with that. To your knowledge, why was that strategy abandoned if it was showing results? And then linked to that is the South has always been adamant that their primary approach or their primary framework is sector policing. In fact, when we had the presentation on the rural safety strategy, that's what they were saying. All of these issues fall within sector policing. And given the comments that you made about how aggravated robbery is crucial, both as a highly policeable category we can clamp down on, and secondly, how it becomes a route for so many other forms of organized crime and violent crime, is sector policing the appropriate approach for addressing aggravated robbery? If not, what is it good for? And what are the shortcomings of sector policing so that we hear about what approaches are needed to address what crime challenges we're facing. And I'm also going to harp on the little issue that I always have to raise because my constituency is in Heidelberg and Mellenburg. The approach needed around addressing gang violence and especially, you know, as you said, specialized investigations backed up by crime intelligence, the relevance of that to that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lele. Honorable Tsonga, and then I'll come to Mr. Grunewald and to Yvonne.
Thanks, Chair. Will be two questions. One, the picture which was painted by the union is not very good. It relates to trust. There seems to be no trust between the police and the union. The question is, do you discuss these issues which you are raising now with them? And if so, what was the conclusion or recommendation? Do they reject what you say? Or they just don't want to participate in the engagement. Second, there was a mention of National Policing Board. Can one give an explanation of what it is and how it can help to solve some of the challenges which you are experiencing? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Fulham.
Thank you, sir. I'm actually being covered by a question again on the... I'd also like to know the reasons for actually stopping the Gauteng aggravated strategy. Just to get that. I think most of the questions should be asked of the police. Thank you.
Thank you,
Yeah, I mean, the part of the purpose of today is really to enable the members to be ready tomorrow.
Sure.
Honourable
Thanks, Chair. One question for Mr. Lesh. Yeah. Hello. And Chief Garrett. I'm wondering how, as a committee, we can get figures on how many stations are without flush toilets, water, electricity, or generators. Now, I ask this because certainly when the latest National Police Commissioner came in, there were 153 stations in the country without one or other, there's actually one or two stations without any of that. So I asked the question again, and unfortunately the Ministry decided to fob me off saying every station has every one of these things. It's a fabrication because, as was pointed out to me by the researcher in their latest strategic plan, there are pages where they will be providing generators over the next 2 years. So to suggest in an answer to a parliamentary question they've already got them all is nonsense. Which I will be raising with the Minister. So is there a way this committee can actually get credible figures of that sort of do we have to go through public works, do we have to go through SAT, where do we get them from if we're going to be brushed off by the department? I'm not sure. So I'm asking our researcher how she would go about doing that. And for Gareth, what are your thoughts on the inability of the SAT to rid themselves of the infamous 1,448 convicted criminals in SAT. You know, I've winkled that out of them. You know, there was another 2 or 3 years still of the criminality ordered to do. They stopped it in 2010. And they've been absolutely unable, probably because of these fine men, the union, to get them up. And we're talking murderers, rapists, bigamists, arsonists. I mean, it's the worst crimes you can imagine. What would any other police station that you've dealt with globally have done? And secondly, the specialised units. Now, Jackie Celebi, as you know, shut them down. I've crunched the numbers over the years and how many child rapists got away, the child protection units shut, how the syndicates flourished with the drug lords, once the Narcotics Bureau was shut down. If you had carte blanche with a police service, how many and what would be the optimal number of specialised units focusing on what? And I agree with you, having a small unit of 400 odd in a province to deal with a specific crime, I mean, has always been, is globally, it's international best practice, it works. So what, okay, count my words.
Yeah.
Highly thinking, intelligent person decided to shut it down. Under whose watch was that shut down? And what have they done since? I know they can just set up roadblocks during peak hours to irritate civilians massively, but actually it does nothing. So what would be the way to go? You're the expert on the academic side of things, and I'm looking to you to find out. Thank you.
Exactly a year ago when you were here, you spoke of the information that you were not given in time to engage in the budget. As the situation improved, my next one still to SAPU is on, you also mentioned the boarded vehicles that are not replaced on time. Has the situation improved? Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members, for those questions. Let's go to the different helpers. Let's start with the guest and then we can end with the parliamentary researchers. So,
thank you, honourable members, for the question. Starting with the issue of leadership, and should the top management be police or civilians? There is no correct single answer to this, and there are various models internationally. I think the one important thing to make is that if you decide not to have a police officer as your national commissioner, then that person should have be recognized widely in public as somebody who is exceptional in public service management. So if you have somebody, for instance, who's been the DG of Home Affairs, turned Home Affairs around, or fixed SARS, or something like that, and he's now got wide public acclaim as being able to use their management skills within the public service in that context to fix it, using resources available, that's the kind of person I would suggest you put in charge of the police because they're probably being the best skills to get. So I would say a blanket under those circumstances prevent civilians coming in. Or if you need a very specific, you know, your head of logistics and procurement at a regional commissioner level, but also, you know, be a civilian, for instance. If there's a new crime that's coming in that requires certain kinds of forensics, cyber crimes, for example, somebody knows about, they might not be in the police. So, but at the end of the day, when you look at the studies of police leadership, the issue of legitimacy with the police is critical. You know, the police culture, the very strong culture, and if it's not a sense that you can trust and follow your sort of senior leaders, because you don't know, they do know one thing, they haven't been a police official, been through the ranks, been a constable, been in the different PC bands, worked your way up, and you start getting national structures that don't make sense to you, you immediately assume because they don't know what they're doing, it breaks down that notion of command control. So, you know, I would really think that the best way to do it, and that's why we recommend that, and agree with the National Development Plan, the National Commission, the Deputy Nationals, that entire top structure, it should be an open, transparent, competitive process. That the National Policing Board, that the recognized people, the experts, chaired by somebody completely independent, retired judge, openly, you know, like you point, the public protector and others, people can be nominated, have shortlist, interview that shortlist of people, and the best candidates apply for those very top positions. And in the process, you're vetting them and you're making sure that anything you know about them comes out. But when you step into the job of National Commissioner, the public and the police have seen their skills, their abilities, how they want to attend to other things. They step into that position with an immediate level of authority and legitimacy, which is crucial. It makes their job immediately easier, and they will rally the various resources around. And it's not, as I say, it's not just, you can't just look at the single individual. You have to look at the entire top management, because the different functions have to work together around a clear vision. And what's happening in many policing agencies around the world is the tendency for different components to fight with each other. There's little policing, detectives, counterintelligence, always operating like silos. It's often because of funding and management process, but you've got to get them working together. So you're a strong manager and leader who's got that vision and can bring those functions together. And there might be no doubt whatsoever that every one of those men and women at the top of the organization is committed, has the right expertise, qualifications, and integrity. There's never a question in the officer's mind who's on the ground trying to fight crime that they can't trust the police to do the right thing. So that's the easy answer, but I think you have the proper process, you'll get the right people. We have them in South Africa, there are many, in the peace of the moment. On the issue of why to use force, there are two fundamental challenges to the occupation of policing anywhere in the world. One is the misuse of powers of personal gain, which is understood as police corruption. Another one is the misuse of the right to use force unnecessarily, and that's police brutality. So when we create a police service, we say, well, these men and women that we're going to train, they're special training to how to use firearms, street survival tactics, to give them uniforms, or maybe not in certain specialized environments, they have the right to use force. But in a democracy, it's the common standard might be the minimum force required to fulfill a lawful objective. They should never ever use anything more than the absolute minimum level of force that's needed to achieve a certain goal. They always have the right to use their firearms as a backup, but ideally you try to train your officers to use their authority through their voice, how they hold themselves in a public space to command authority, to say, if you're doing X, Y, and Z, communicating properly. And I think one of the things you'll find that happens too often across the country in many jurisdictions is that because there's a lack of that training capacity, police officers too quickly start using physical force when it's not necessary. Too often do we see cases of people being assaulted off there in handcuffs people on too tight, using pepper spray unnecessarily, and it's not coming in a normative way, because when the police are not properly trained and don't have the confidence in their training and their ability to command respect, the next thing they lose is fear. And this is not, I mean, America has got a huge problem at this moment, and you'll see the stuff coming out of there. It's not unique to any specific agency, but it is something. So you really want to make sure that there are very clear standards, and I think one of the shortcomings of the South African Police Service is that there's not a single way of training police officials to use force. We can't see them on street survival, how to use firearms, but it's not linked to a single set of policies. When you start giving instructions, at what point do you move into the next level of using force, and how do you communicate that to the person you're working with? Or were you trying to subject to the rule? So the common reaction is too many police officers quickly jump to use force. So they always have to have the use of force because they're going to confront armed criminals and they must do it correctly. So it's a continuum, and they must be clear in every officer's mind when to use what element of force, whether it's just physically handling somebody to when they use their firearms. When it comes to housing robbery strategy, it's a very good question why it was abandoned. You'd have to ask then Lieutenant General Petros who's the one abandoned it. Look, I think the one way I understood it was that when he came in at the end of 2011 until the civil statistics, and robbery seemed to, you know, was going down. So then you think that we are on top of this problem. We also then started the process really to 11 of doing the whole new strategy for police for the county province. And you're saying, look, as far as I understood it, that this is one strategy and one crime thing, but we need to have strategies for various crimes. And we end up re-strategizing process that we orientated those units so they stopped focusing on those specific crimes. So once again, then he left and yeah, I don't think the new strategy is counting for any crime at the moment. But that was the reason. I don't, you know, I think it was, and you'll find that it's also common practice internationally where the police are getting on top of something and they think, okay, well, it's going down, it's down to such a level. But you'll see also what's become more common in your tip police and local terrorism, they keep those structures there. So even if you have one quarter of the robberies you had 5 years ago, you make sure that the same, the units of training those people that specialize in force, the capacity to move, because it's easy to share an existing structure and way of working to other heights. That is to shut down the entire structure and then establish it later when the company comes back. So really what they start doing is that, for instance, in the various boroughs of York, they will just move, extend their reach into other kind of crime, organized crime that might be a little bit violent, more murders. But you keep the structures in place, because specialization is a way of mentoring new, young police officers into a way of working. They also have very good ethos, you know, they're more likely to live a professional ethos. And I think around the issue of specialization, which we'll speak to a bit more, it's not an easy issue to decide when and how much specialization, but I'll get to that in a second. Just on the issue about detective policing, which follows...
On that specific issue, can Gareth tell us, because he started, the strategy started in 2008, what role did the World Cup, the Soccer Cup, play in it? Wasn't it just because of that? And after the Cup, they justified it to ban it.
Yeah, well, we started, the strategy was probably implemented in the beginning of 2009, and part of the reason why I think they could actually do it is because of the World Cup. Because they said, well, look, we're having this increase in street robberies, house robberies, we don't want tourists coming here and being robbed. So, it certainly gave a level of political will to a strategy that might not have otherwise, because there was a lot of resistance at the senior levels of that time in South Africa, because there was Gauteng, notably from the then provincial commissioner, who thought that, you know, there shouldn't be specialising, because at the time there was this notion of de-specialisation. So the idea that you'd actually be specialising in certain aspects of policing from the national at that time to the top management of South African police service, because that started in 2006. And this is the thing about the complexity of specialization. When they started de-specializing, there were 560 odd specialized units across the country, looking at everything. So every time there was a kind of a certain crime in a particular area, they set up another specialized unit. The problem with that is then you have a lot of duplication, too many people all over the place, some of them become fearsome, some of them become corrupted, you can't control that many. But the problem is, to have the following extreme, to just say, well, right, we've got too many specialized units, let's just have two, serious and violent crime, organized crime and specialized units, is also the extreme. So you've got to find that. I think certain crimes like murder, particularly crimes related to organized crime, robberies, and specialized commercial crimes, and then certainly your family child sexual violent crime, those are units you'll find almost everywhere in the world, or certainly emerging, because they're such specialized kinds of investigations. So you always have a specialization there. But, you know, you don't necessarily want to over-specialize. So it's really about saying what resources you have, what are your most important crimes, set up those units. And sometimes they can be, as I say, they might start with robbery, get into a robbery, then start working in cybercrime, but you've got the structure there. So you it's not an easy sort of answer to say how much specialization should there be, because different agencies do it differently. But the one thing you do know is that you have to have it. It's critically important if you want, because what happens is in that environment over years, these detectives get to the real world, crime intelligence, get to know prosecutors, who then the prosecutors know that they can work with. And you can just see in this aggravated robbery strategy, I mean, there's a bail, the denying of bail is at 92%, the first sort of 900 people they arrested. They really had about 8 prosecutors they were working with. They knew they were specialized. You know, there's a whole different way of working. But all these 22 top teams were working very well. Some of them they were using dumping grass, some stations did well, and I think they were even the specialized philosophy. So you have to look at those kinds of issues as well. And then you get the other problem with specialization is that if it becomes very successful and it's not held accountable, it becomes corrupted, then you have another problem. And there's various examples in America about specialized units actually becoming, taking over the good running in certain areas and stuff like that, New York and San Francisco. So it's not a simple thing. But it can work if it's well managed properly. Just to talk about the question of sector policing and aggravated robbery. Sector policing is actually a community police model. It's there to try and ensure that police officials are elected in particular locations and in communities, and that the community knows who those police officers are, and that they are dedicated to building relationships so that when members of the community help or get information about crime or want to engage with the police, there's somebody they know and they've had that kind of history with that person. So it's really a community policing model. It's not a specialized function to the extent that you would do aggravated robbery. And the reason is that gangs committing aggravated robberies operate across sectors and across these boundaries. So they don't really care about whether that's a precinct A or precinct B. When we started assessing what was going on in Kaiteng earlier, what was happening is that there were 134 police precincts, and a gang would be operating in Honeydew, in Canton, Douglasdale, Francis Centurion, be based somewhere else, could be based in Atkinsville, something like that. So they're just moving around. And then every time a house robbery or a business robbery happened in those precincts, it would be a new detective investigating a dog. So you had like all the detectives with this, not realizing they're investigating the same group. So they were sharing information about motor operandi, and they could bring that information to bear. So that is why they said, well, let's, all this information comes into one place, we look for commonalities, and they hand out to these task teams, who then operate across the boundaries. Sector policing can support that because they might be able to tell and explain to the communities what's going on with aggravated robbery, provide them information about how to report these crimes, why it's important, and see the reduction of people reporting these robberies. So, you know, they should work in tandem. They're not one or the other. They actually need both. The gang violence stuff is a very different type of thing because of the kind of culture that gangs create within a certain community and the factors that lead to it. So policing is an important aspect. Specialized policing is an important aspect there, but it's not a solution. Basically, you almost need to kind of use police as an immediate band-aid to create stabilization and to stop violence. And that's also how the policing is used in a lot of the kind of areas in America where they're battling with gangs as well. They're just there to kind of be a way of reducing violence so that other structures can come in and start trying to move kids away from joining gangs, providing development, better education, that kind of thing. If you just have policing, you get one or two kind of situations, but you strengthen the gangs' legitimacy in those areas because gang policing can be pretty violent. The gangs will shoot cops, they shoot back. It can create a situation where you actually have a violent issue policing. So it's a very difficult thing. We saw that up in Rio, for instance, to the World Cup there, how they tried almost 2 years, bringing community policing as anti-gang strategy. But they first had to take areas. They had to kind of establish militarized police, then keep them there, build up these stations. And there's still a jury is arguing about how sustainable that was. It was incredibly resource intensive. And also, there's no easy answers to gang, unfortunately. I think that's, you know, answered pretty much. Thank you.
Thank you, General.
Thanks, Chairperson. The proper research. Well, currently there are 13 divisions, there are 9 provinces of commissioners. Well, there's a reduction from 6 to 3 of the deputy national commissioners, which are saying the resources and practicalize this on ground. We made one example, obviously, of a combination of divisions, one being the human resource management, one being human resource, HRD, human resource development training. And these are all corporate service components. Create one divisional commissioner position which takes all these functions together. You reduce, obviously, and at the lower levels, obviously, the chief directors and directors below. You can utilize those resources down on the ground where the shortage of resources. So the taking a little bit back, where there were still components called areas. When there was a complaint about areas that they are paper pushers, you know, it's a letter from the station or a memorandum from the station. What the area commissioner does, I concur. It goes to the provincial commissioner, I concur. It goes to the national commissioner. When there was a complaint about that structure, there was an agreement that this be dissolved, and then they created other areas in a different name, called clusters. The call was, these resources must go to the ground where you just only need the province to coordinate all the policy functions in that particular province. not this other donkey pass or gypsy pass, different other rules levels, which means policing possible. So there are a lot of resources currently, and it's just now building comfort zones. So I think with the example that we've given, there can be a strategic review of all the functions at head office, which are almost similar, clusters together, one division or commissioner to take charge of that and reduce those levels. Thank you.
Chair, on the issue of the organizational design of the police, we presented a proposed structure in 2012 when we criticized the heaviness of the police there. And we divided it into two, operations and support. All operational structures will have to fall under an operation, and then all other support providing institutions will have four divisions to fall under support. Then we have to remove the, in the office of the National Commissioner, I don't need, if I was the National Commissioner, I would not need a Lieutenant General. I would not need that. A Major General is sufficient in that environment to coordinate all the activities of the office of the National Commissioner. And then you, because, you know, they have reduced the TNC to see, but they have employed another person who was the same salary level as the DNC, but that person sitting in the office of the National Commission. So we may have got the structure, and I think when we arrive back, we'll make it available to you. It's just a suggestion that we've given you. But when it comes to issues of Section 35, I think you asked the question there, Honourable Member. Section 35 is a refined condition that is derived from the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act indicates how a person is removed from service, especially when the post has become redundant. But in government, through DPSA, they've derived a document to say that if you are in this environment and your post has become redundant and they cannot place you anywhere else, Section 35 shall be utilized, not by the conditions of employment. That is spelled out. It's very clear. It's in there. The issue of Section 49, we refer to as well here. Section 49 is the employment of skills which the police cannot produce. For example, the issue of social workers. We don't produce social workers in the police. Psychiatrists, psychologists, spiritual service, forensic experts. All of those people are not produced by the police. So what if the police want the utilization of such kind of people? They have to employ them in that environment through Section 49, which is not happening now. It's been used erroneously for some other reason. And then we come to union relationship. You know, the more you talk as a unionist, this is our job. Our job is to talk up until we're blue. In a police environment, we don't have the right to strike. Our job is to talk. But when you talk and then they finance, what I say is unpassable to them. What they do is that they close out of the system. They close out. We have been out for quite some time, but the police officials, you can't close me out from my own employment. I'm a professional cop for 24 years. I've been here. You can remove everything away from me, I will get it if I want to get it. But is that the correct way of operating? I don't think that is a good relationship between your strategy partners. I don't think that's the way we should work. We should work together. We should find common understanding on issues that are of utmost importance to the president itself, and even to the membership, because at the end, it is the members who must be happy, who must then in turn provide good services to the members, to the communities we serve. So our relationship wasn't that good, but on the 19th of December, we did have a discussion with the National Commission. We spoke a lot of other issues there, but it was too late. It was really late. I mean, she's been here for almost
I think she's going for a third year. Yeah, I think third year now.
12, yeah.
Yes. It was too late. But we're used to it, because even the new minister, we haven't negative, we're still going to be the same, I don't know when. So, it's relationship. If we can improve on this, I think the service will be better off than it is today. We need to improve on this. And then on the issue of the vehicles, the resort establishment that suggests to you that Morobe police station should have 20 cars. You want to know if it has improved. It will indicate that there is 20 cars in Morobe. If you go and look at it in hard copies that they will give it to you, it will show you that in Morobe there's got 20 cars. But it will never, that is called an ideal situation. But the actual situation, if you go to Morocco, you will not find 20 cars. This is making sector policing very difficult. Sector policing is a very, very demanding policy model. It needs both human resources, it needs mechanical transport available. So what is happening now is that the members who are working in sectors, what they do is that they rotate in per hour. One vehicle has to go through his route because those people are supposed to be patrolling that route. That is their route. When they're done with it, they must bring it back and give it to another team of people, utilize it to go and, increase a certain route. Now, that brings wear and tear on mechanical transport. Now, many of these cars, you'll find them lying in the garages. Some of them are waiting for authorities, funding authorities. Some of them are just there for, they pay for quite some time in it. But there's also another thing that I feel strongly about it, Honorable Chief. We need to ask the police. There are cases which have been opened. There's so much serious corruption that is taking place in police garages because of this thing called outsourcing of repairing of vehicles. The cases which have been opened so far, these cases have been coming on for quite some time. I think it's almost 5 years now. I don't think for you to investigate a crime, you need to have such a long time because, I mean, there is paperwork, it's horrific. And I think the auditor also sent a team of people to go and check to verify this information because the information that came through your source. Then it gives you a feedback on this. Because it's impacting negatively on the issues of vehicles. So the situation hasn't changed. It's very critical. Board vehicles, if you want to board a car, that money, if we budget now and say for this year 2015, 2016, I am putting aside 3 billion rand, let's give you an example, 3 billion rand, I want to sustain the resource establishment guide of all police stations. I want to sustain it. Which means that if this vehicle breaks down, I will be able to replace that vehicle immediately because the money is there. But what happens is that you apply for vehicles, instead of you getting 6 cars, which you have requested to maintain your resource establishment debt, you only get 2 cars. So they are running on deficits all the time. And I don't know if they bring this information to the attention of the leadership. The North Policy is a disciplined environment. They conceal some of this information, but they are able to share this with the unions. I think I answered all the questions that I was asked.
I just like to give an opportunity to the Deputy Minister to come in on the relationship with the unions. Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the presenter. I think most of the things that has been said here, they're not new to me. As you know, that I once presided over this committee for a very, very long time. And I must admit and say that according to me, it's my own observation. I think SARS has got a problem on how to manage their resources. It's not to say that they don't have resources. They do have resources. But the problem is the management of those resources. I've been saying this before I joined SARS. I'm still saying it as I'm in SARS here. Many of these challenges that have been raised here, I think SARS is aware of them. But I think the challenge that we have is people not willing to do what they are supposed to be
to be doing. But one thing I wanted to respond on, Jefferson, is the issue of disbandment of the areas and the introduction of the clusters. I presided over at portfolio committee, and we took that decision as the portfolio committee. After visiting almost more than 50% of the police stations in the provinces, in different 9 provinces, it became obvious that the areas were too vast for one individual to be an area commissioner. I remember one incident where we visited the 5th province, where we were with the former member of parliament, Jason Douglas, where we went to the Northern Free State from the Southern Free State, where the police started saluting Jason Douglas, thinking he is the provincial commissioner. Then it became obvious that we have a problem with the area. Where we also indicated that some of the area commissioners don't even know where other police stations are stationed in provinces. Hence, we said we need a small structure instead of that big, vast, instead of those big, vast areas to be visited only by one person. And then after consultation, and the union were part of those consultations, we said maybe we should think of having a certain number of stations, then let's say we have 4 or 3 or 5 police stations instead of 20 police stations or one cluster. We said let us have 5, 4 police stations where we have a cluster. That would go to each and every police station, know what are the resources required in those police stations, including the cars that they are talking about, including everything that is being required by the police station, so that the information can flow quickly to the provincial office, from the provincial office to the national office. If we are proposing as the union that we need to disband the cluster, it's not a good move, because there's nothing wrong with the cluster. I think what we need to do is to monitor whether the cluster knows what is their responsibility. Otherwise, tomorrow they will say that we must disband the police station that too much. I have a problem. Because the cluster is, I think it was a good thing to have a cluster. Practically, when the presentation, we even had researchers who came to us and made a presentation on how we can change from the area to the cluster, which is a very good model. What is needed is for us to make sure that the cluster is resourced and also the cluster do what it was meant to do. Not to get all the resources and put them in a cluster police station. The idea was not to put the resources there. The idea was to take the resources to all the 5 police stations that fall under a specific cluster, and also to monitor the function of the police that is in a cluster model. But areas, I agree that this is where the areas, if there were a problem. But the cluster, I'm still saying that it's a good approach, and let us make sure that they know what is expected from them. Some of the issues that has also been raised with regard to the vehicles and also the time that is being taken by specific garages, if not all, to repair such vehicles is a problem, a serious problem. I visited most of the areas now that I'm here. This is my 5th year as a deputy minister, where you will really discover what was said by Sapu. Like in some instances, you go to a police station and then you are given a list that you have 20 cars, and then you discover that 4 of these cars have been in the garage for the past 2 years. I'm not talking about 2 months, 2 years, you see. And then you start then by trying to correct that and get the proper information and everything. I think the problem that we have, of which I also then advise the police management to, is to train the station commanders on how to manage their resources. If we can get that area right on how to manage resources for them, but if they are not properly managed, then it's a problem. You get in some instances, the communities will come and say that, I went to the police station and I'm told that they can't go to a country because there are no vehicles. But we see there are more than 20 vehicles standing in that. And I personally visited those police stations. All of them are standing on clutter and bus and that, you know, they're not in good working conditions. You understand that? Then one of the things that 2 years ago, I then spoke to the class management saying that, let us find out and what is the problem? that we're having when it comes to the sales. But among the things that we discovered also is the fact that when we recruit a youth to join as a force, one of our requirements was the issue of the driving license. We said that you must have a driving license, you must have matric, must be fit, and then and some other requirements. But unfortunately, we didn't say to them where to get those driver's licenses. Because some of them, it came with those driver's licenses, and then we said the driver license, good, you have matric, good, you have matric, and then you get into the system. Just to find out that you can't drive in real sense. But when you get to a police station, we'll be given them the keys and say that, please take the vehicles, go to the such places. And then you drive from Pan or from Worcester to Cape Town with the first gear. How long are you expecting that car then, or that vehicle then, to life spent? How long will it last? That's the problem. And then we said that, in order for us to correct that, because we can't punish them for that, let us then try and include into our curriculum K53, which is the driving. Whether you have the driver's license or not, you have to drive at college and pass that driving at the college.
Yeah.
So that you can satisfy that you can drive. Whether you have it or you don't have it. You understand? Whether you can deny it for 5 years, it doesn't matter. You get in and then you drive. That you can be satisfied that you can drive. By so doing, we have that belief that we'll be able then to take control of our vehicles in police stations. That group where we introduced the issue of K53, I think it's the group that we took in 2013, if you remember, a union there, which is our training for 2 years. So that means they will be the first group that will be coming out this financially, of which I think that maybe things will be better there. But if still there, we are going to monitor that area and make sure that our communities don't suffer because of us, as the police will say, that we can't do such areas because of one thing. And these unions, I know that the police officers, yes, I'm a police, but when we invite you, when we have some sort of activities, and you know very well that we have challenges with us, some political entities are doing very well, keep on the good work, but knowing that I'm not doing well. That's the problem that we have. And they come to the portfolio committee and say, we have challenges. But yesterday, when we were asked, invited to give you 5 minutes, say something, we say, keep it up, we are doing very well. Know very well that I'm not doing well. So those are the things that we want to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, for that information. We appreciate it. I think the researchers, you've got a lot to say, and we'll be going to take the other presentations before lunch. And then we do lunch, and then, yeah.
I had a question to the
parliament. Yeah, we can do that now.
So I related to Spain, I didn't do further research, but what I can say is, if you spend, it doesn't mean that you spend efficiently and effectively. So it's all about allocating the money where the needs are, and if you keep on overspending, there must be something wrong. Either you must implement efficiency gains within that program or within that item, or there's something wrong with the calculation of the budget that is allocated to that. It's perhaps not enough or it's too much if you underspend. In terms of if you keep on underspending on the item, you must the capacity to spend, especially in infrastructure, there must be something, there must be a root cause for overall underspending. If you underspend on infrastructure, perhaps there's a problem in supply chain management processes or with public works. I think you just need to do further investigation in the reasons. You can't keep on just moving money just to cover all the overspending and take away from underspending. And I think that's the main thing that we need to look at, yeah. And even with compensation, I think there was a huge discussion on the structure. And perhaps we need that structure to deliver the services. We don't know, but that further investigation and research will show that. Do we need that structure to deliver service? Or is there some efficiency that we can gain from compensation of employees so that we can actually reduce our compensation, our general spending on compensation. That's basically what.
Thank you, Mr. Sen. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm very quick. Honourable Molibata, in terms of the deputy special commanders, it seems to be introduced for them to set the burden of administrative duties away from the special commander. They are capacitating the structure currently, and only time will tell whether it will have a positive impact. And I think the committee should keep a keen eye on this in future. Then, in terms of the civilian secretariat being a separate vote, we haven't had any official correspondence regarding that yet, but I know that the secretariat has significant problems with the structures like the financial management and things like that to transfer to a proper department. It might be taking them a little bit more time to complete those structures. The National Policing Board, I think Garrison pointed or touched on it somewhat. It is recommended to be established with a panel of outside experts on policing, especially in terms of recruitment and appointment of senior management. Like Gareth said, to have it more functional and more open and transparent. And then Honourable Philip Barnard, in terms of the basic services at police stations, there's no easy way to gauge whether police stations have those services available. Both the threat plan and the ATP points towards delivery of those services. And I think the most important way for the committee to assert those issues is to go through the annual report and see those, make a list of the stations and actually go and visit them and to see whether or not they do have the services required. Because we, as a committee, we know that the lack of basic structures and service really impacts greatly on the ability of police to function.
Thank you very much. We will go to the last two presentations. The one by Ndefunu Nkwazi, Mr. Zaki Ahmad, and also Akoff. Who's going to go first? Akoff. Maybe while we wait, just to indicate to members, we're starting tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the Marks Building, 515, 9 o'clock, with the National Commissioner and the team, Program 1 and 2. And then Friday, we're continuing with that exercise. We will on Friday deal with maybe visible policing if we haven't got enough time on Wednesday in Program 3. Tuesday, we're going to deal with Program 4 and 5. Wednesday, next week, Civilian Secretariat. Thursday, IPED. And then Friday, the 24th of April, CIA. So just to alert members on that. You're welcome, Akoff, and you can introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Melanie Dugmore. I'm making the presentation on behalf of Akoff. I would just like to thank the committee and acknowledge the Deputy Minister and Honourable Members for the opportunity to present. The approach of the presentation, many of the points have been covered, so I will just highlight very briefly those and that are reinforced by other presenters. We've also taken the liberty of looking at broad areas which apply both to civilian secretariat IFIT and very briefly to CIRA. In terms of looking at the guiding principles for the policy framework which informs the strategic plan and annual plan of all the respective agencies, APCOP believes that the values, principles, and rights and obligations articulated in the Constitution must inform South Africa's approach to policing. Central to these are transparency and accountability, promotion of rights of equality, human dignity, and of course freedom and security of the person. These are central to any framework for policing in a democratic state. The Constitution acknowledges and places an added burden on security forces in Section 1995, who deserve specific mention on their obligations to adhere both to the Constitution, but to international and regional binding instruments. It is our belief, therefore, that international and regional human rights instruments, in addition to the Constitution, inform and dictate a rights-based approach to policing. They also provide a legal framework for democratic policing. More recently, the National Development Plan articulates these in clear recommendations for policing, which need to be integrated into policy legislation and applied by SACs and other agencies in the strategic planning process. In terms of enhancing the quality of accountability, recognizing the central role that the portfolio committee plays, we do believe that there is a role to engage with current reporting frameworks. Implementation needs to be interrogated, and we really do support the point that was made by the Budget Office. In terms of monitoring performance, we must go beyond percentage reduction targets and needs to examine effectiveness and operational strategies in receiving desired outcomes and not just outputs. Critically, therefore, alignment is central. Another area is the issue of levels of compliance. We have legislation domestically as well as internationally and continentally which set out very clear obligations and benchmarks. It is our view that these need to be incorporated into reporting frameworks. Another critical area in terms of reporting is the extent to which this committee and other oversight bodies look at the extent to which internal policy environments have been aligned to the national policy frameworks, such as the National Development Plan and domestic legislation. This requires an interrogation of all the internal and institutional environment mechanisms, including national instructions, standing orders, performance management systems, to ensure that they do support compliance. In addition, the reporting framework must provide for mechanisms for meaningful partnerships and engagement with civil society, and we welcome the opportunity today to be part of that process. Our recommendation, therefore, that the committee really needs to engage with the criteria for reporting, and that it must be appropriate and relevant in the data in order that it can discharge its oversight mandate. Seeing that the annual plan and strategic plans are central to the annual reports which will come later, it is therefore critical that they provide the absolutely appropriate data in terms of criteria and indicators which will enable the committee to interrogate performance. In terms of some of the deficiencies which we've identified both in SAFs and CSG's strategic plans and annual reports, that has been alluded to, so I will deal with it very briefly, is really the lack of alignment to recommendations in the National Development Plan. Specifically, Chapter 12 in relation to the Code of Conduct, National Police Board, competency testing and development of a system to develop high caliber police through a two-tier management system. This is an obligation not just on SACS but on CST in terms of their responsibility to provide the policy framework, but also, quite critically, the opportunity presented by the White Paper on Policing, which we believe the committee will be vigilant of. The National Policing Board has been discussed. We believe that the White Paper Policing should be the starting point to clearly articulate the establishment role and function of the board, and therefore be subsequently legislated through the amendment pending on the SAPS Act. It should then be incorporated very clearly into strategic planning and performance plans. Similarly, the NDP Code of Conduct discussion around the professionalizing of the police, we believe that there needs to be very clear disaggregated indicators that one can meaningfully measure performance agreements and professional standards, and that this should be presented to the Committee for Interrogation. Demilitarization has also been discussed. We do actually also request that the committee be briefed on the policy proposals by CSD and SAS on how, as the medium-term strategic framework required implementation of the National Development Plan, how are these going to be achieved. In terms of some brief points really on reducing levels of crime in SAS annual report, We do want to emphasize the need for long-term sustainable safety strategies, and we do believe the white paper on safety and security will attempt to address some of those policy frameworks. But critically, there needs to be mobilization of both state and non-state capacities, as well as meaningful citizen involvement and co-responsibility. We do believe there's inadequate attention to promoting partnerships and community-centered policing approaches. Further, the roles of the CPS and CFS need to be clarified and augmented in policy and regulation, and critically, the issue of resourcing and funding. If there is to be mechanisms for real community interventions. And we do believe at the local level, SAS needs to interrogate this paradigm of community-centered policing into operations right down to station level. Community-centered policing is central to the democratic policing agenda in South Africa. The complexity and challenges which have been alluded to around functions of CDS, which vary from area to area and province to province, from rural to urban and peri-urban dynamics have been noted. It is therefore critical that station management at the point of service be equipped to respond to challenges, but also to develop appropriate, meaningful partnerships. And this should go beyond building community police relationships. It should really be related to issues of accountability, both in terms of strategies, joint problem solving, and sharing of information. In this regard, station performance tools need urgent attention to realize this objective. Reducing levels of crime. The performance indicators for addressing contributors to crime and reducing levels of crime, including crimes against women and children, are inadequate. As has been mentioned earlier, they really need to be interrogated and elaborated on. We also feel that they fail to address necessary interventions by the police which can reduce the incidence of these crimes and improve investigation results. In this regard, the barriers to reporting of sexual offences and domestic violence need to be engaged with. The challenges investigating these offences need to inform strategies and approaches. And these mechanisms need to be incorporated into performance management, right down to station level, in terms of levels of compliance with regulatory and reporting frameworks. We note the CSB's policy on reducing barriers to reporting crimes on gender-based violence, and this is welcome. Quite critically, policy must be institutionalized if this is to have a real and meaningful effect. And therefore, we believe that the committee needs to continue its vigilance around this area, and really interrogate the extent to which this translates into procedures and instructions. We also believe that there needs to be a real engagement on the role of the NPA in conjunction with the Oversight Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, in particular in relation to the breakdown and blockages that occur between the police and the National Prosecuting Authority. We also believe that the CSP policy on reducing barriers be incorporated into the reporting framework for SAPS, IPID, and CSP. In terms of domestic violence, due to the shift of the reporting obligations from IPID, or ICD as there was, and now IPID to CSP, there have been some challenges in the loss of this independent complaints mechanism. We believe it needs urgent attention, both in terms of capacitating provinces, in terms of ensuring that complainants have an avenue for redress and engagement. We welcome the committee's vigilance on oversight of domestic violence and look forward to its continuing. And we do believe that there's an opportunity to enhance the quality of reporting of both SAPS and CSP. We do believe that SAPS needs to look at a policy or strategy around policing of domestic violence and not limit their approach to just issues of compliance. The issue of impunity has been dealt with, so I will just briefly support the comments which were made by ISS. There is a very clear challenge around the issue of low prosecutions of police members. And there needs to be a strategy to look at some of the systemic challenges, whether these are issues of capacity in IPED, or they relate to the prosecution policy of the APA, or the interface of the NPA was hyperly investigated, we do believe this requires urgent attention. In terms of addressing inefficiencies on the issues of resource allocation, we are aware that the committee has been engaging with this, and a lot of discussion has been had on the issue of the top-heavy nature. Of concern to APCOP is where resources are located. Are they in headquarters or are they at station level? And there needs to be a proper determination around allocation of resources. Our constitution dictates equality in service provision. Obviously, there needs to be a nuance approach which recognizes the burden of crime, population, racial, geographical distance, as well as complexity of crime. But we do believe that the committee has a central role to play in overseeing that process and interrogating critically the strategy. We believe that audit, for lack of a better word, should really look at the location of operation and administrative personnel, including at station, specialized unit level, and headquarters. In terms of another area of efficiency, which obviously SAPS has indicated a willingness to engage with, what we do think is missing is attention to detail on the interface between information systems, both those impacting on policing and crime within the JCPS cluster, but also beyond. And I think the example of the domestic violence register and the firearm registry is a classical example which has been discussed extensively. We also believe that data collection, including the capturing of disaggregated information on reporting of crime, needs to be urgently addressed. If we are to look at appropriate monitoring and evaluation strategies, we need to know what the situation is. These need to inform policing approaches so that any policy proposals need to be evidence-based. In terms of improving oversight and accountability, we do believe that the civilian secretariat for police needs to actually develop a comprehensive monitoring evaluation framework for monitoring police performance as is required in terms of its act, and that must be engaged with by the committee. We do believe that there is a critical role for provincial legislatures as well as provincial secretariats and departments of community safety to play in enhancing the accountability architecture. And we do believe that there's opportunity for this engagement. In this regard, the CSP's role in capacitating provincial secretariats is also critical. An area which also want to draw attention to is oversight of municipal policing services local level and the role of municipal councils who are currently charged with this function. The prevention and combating of torture legislation was adopted in 2013. We have international obligations in terms of the convention on this. We therefore actually urge that there be interaction with this committee and the Department of Justice and Corrections in terms of how that is going to be realized and joint oversight over implementation of the Act. We also do believe that the SAP strategy to combat and prevent torture needs to be aligned to the Convention Against Torture, specifically around process and procedures for complaints of personal police custody, rules of interrogation, prohibition of use of certain equipment, regular and independent visits to police detention cells, and training personnel on the new Act. We also believe that detention needs to be applied to IPA's classification of torture and the capacitation of IPA investigators to discharge this mandate. Another area of concern to APCOP is the area of public order policing. We do believe that there is a non-alignment with our international human rights standards regarding the use of force. There has been some discussion on that. We also believe that the Secretariat has been in the process of developing a use of force policy, and no doubt the recommendation due from the following commission will require interrogation of SAP's approach to public order policing and the use of force. The challenges in implementation of the Regulations of Gatherings Act need to be critically addressed. In terms of the use of force, specifically the levels and allegations of police brutality are unacceptably high. And by ISS's own presentation earlier, we can see that there's actually possibly significant underreporting of these incidents, given the high number of civil claims being lodged in court, which do not match the statistics. We very believe that there's an urgent need to revise the use of force policy and align it to SAPS's public order policing policy, Pretty clear. The alignment of national instructions, training of police members and procedural measures need to be supported by review mechanisms to provide both support to members and where appropriate sanctions and training. ICID needs to be capacitated and trained on the nuances and challenges in interpreting what is quite a legalistic environment around interpreting the necessary proportional and reasonable use of force. In terms of capacitating police and oversight bodies, we do believe that the training of such members, not just new recruits, but existing members, needs to be reviewed and interrogated carefully, and in particular areas around human rights training. The caliber and capacity of ICID investigators needs to be critically addressed. If we look at the number of cases that are being submitted to the NPA for prosecution, and the numbers which actually proceed to court, and then the level of convictions, we do have some challenges. And we believe that they need to be equipped and trained appropriately to discharge this mandate. We also believe that the civilian secretariat can actually enhance their research and capacity by developing strategic collaboration and partnerships with academic institutions and research institutions. In conclusion, we do believe that the One Paper on Policing provides a critical opportunity to align the current policing strategic framework for policing in South Africa. We believe it's critical that the policy actually focuses on the key challenges and provides clear policy direction. And we look forward to engagement with the portfolio committee when those papers do actually come for presentation. Quite critically, there needs to be integration with strategic and annual plans. Very briefly, before I conclude, I just wanted to make some comments on the regulatory authority. And obviously the bill is pending, but there are serious challenges around accountability and oversight of private security, and we believe urgent attention is needed to address these challenges. It is critical that new legislation provides for appropriate regulatory and institutional mechanisms. At a minimum, the committee should be engaging and receiving reports on transgressions by the sector, including data on offences by security officers, including domestic violence, deaths, use of firearms, use of force, and more critically, the regulation and issue of equipment that isn't used by the industry, which currently seems to be a grey area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bakul, for that. The last presentation by Mr. Ahmad. After that, we will take lunch. And then we will come back for questions.
What do you look to reduce having to? Should we not finish everything now? We can eat in the dark, but not talk in the dark, you know?
Then we will find a solution.
Candles. What? I really don't have a clue. We look to reduce
Yeah, thank you very much for the Deputy Minister for attendance. We're looking forward to seeing you also tomorrow. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Can I just take this occasion and abuse the platform? I would like to thank all the presenters, our peers, just to come and listen to what the people are saying outside on how they see us. But I'm really disappointed with all the presentations that we had. None of them said something about the killing of the police, which is a challenge presently. Each and every month we bury more than 10 police officers. We're expecting them to assist us on how to deal with that challenge. Thank you.
The union.
Yeah, yeah.
Kumza, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, members. We're going to give the opportunity for the last presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good afternoon to you, Jefferson, for fellow committee members and everyone present. My name is Kumeda Nzungwana. I'm from the Social Justice Coalition in Kaimisa. Gifula Nkwazi and SGP will make it on submission.
And I think just to give a context, we've separated the position into three segments. The organization where we're working and why we're looking at the budget the way we are. Our submission, also the recommendations, and we'll share it between Uzake and myself. Firstly, the SJC, the grassroots movement based in Khayelitsha, trying to advocate for clean and safe sanitation, but also safer communities. Dikukwazi, on the other hand, is a research and learning initiative that is directed at supporting other community-based organizations in terms of research, legal support, and also how can citizens, ordinary citizens, engage actively on their rights, including the police. We work with a number of partners, including in Khayelitsha, we work with South African Police Service in Khayelitsha, provincial management, other community-based organizations, other social movements, etc. Just for the Khayelitsha, but I'm assuming everyone probably knows the context. It is Black Township, which is situated in Cape Town. Median income of about 1,600 rand per month per household. There's different types of households, so there's formal houses, which is brick houses. There's backyard, people staying in the backyard, there's sheds, which include informal settlements. Like any other township, it comprises of high unemployment rate, and there's a high percentage of youth. And like any other informal settlement, there is problem with services, like your water, extra sanitation, extra roads, street lights, and all these, we cannot ignore that they do contribute to impact of safety. But I think I'm saying this because I want us to understand that when we talk about safety and community safety, we can't remove it away from deep race, gender, and class inequality. And so when I'm going forward in my presentation, I want you to bear in mind that those are that's a position in which we're looking at our mission. What is our understanding of safety as members of the Khayelitsha or the Social Justice Coalition? Are you safe in your own home? And that's a question you ask yourself. Are you safe in your street? Are you safe when you're accessing public transport? Are you safe in your school or at work? Are you safe when you're accessing basic infrastructure like housing, toilets, play parks, sports facilities, and etc.? I think I might say when you talk about safety, you're not saying the police are the perpetrators of crime. Maybe selected in certain laws, but crime is committed by people. So we are looking at it from that perspective. Again, we are talking, earlier we were talking about statistics in terms of when we look about other initiatives that we're doing really have an impact on people on the ground in terms of is the statistics going up or is it going down? And I think we must also bear in mind that communities are different from one to another. So while when you're looking at murders across the country, it's been going down, Khayelitsha specifically when you zoom in, it's really going up. And that's how we need to look at strategies that we use to deal with crime at local communities. Again, I can say the same thing with sexual offences. Even though they're going down to other countries, they are going up in an area like Khayelitsha. I saw GBH, and I think I cannot emphasize what Mr. Gareth Newham said earlier in terms of aggravated robbery. It has been going sky up, and it's really high. And I think he has, I'm not going to go into detail of the effect of having aggravated robbery being really that high. And I've put in there some of how we understood the constitutional mandate of the police, just so we can see that in what lengths are we looking at. But also what role do they have in ensuring that the resources that police have really speaks to what people experience on the ground and how they view the police is really dependent on how people feel they are being protected by the police. Also, the Best Act, which speaks about the role of the National Commissioner, which hopefully when you're going forward, we can start to note. How do we get other set leaders, like the National Commissioner and Provincial Commissioner, really speak to the needs of the people on the ground rather than speaking to the board policy level. And one thing I want to go back to when we talk about the recommendations that we go forward is the Equality Act, which speaks about every state department having the responsibility to promote and achieve equality for everyone. And all ministers have a duty to play in this. But we must also bear in mind that our communities are really unequal. And so when our state leaders or ministers really try to make decisions, we must really bear in mind that our society is really unequal based on the issues I've mentioned before. So you have a pie chart of the current budget that is tabled. But when we went to different forums to get comments on the budget, you have the estimated national budget, which is about 12% or 11% of the whole national budget. You also have the police budget. But the question is, what does this mean to a resident who is a college? And I must say again, I think this, when I'm talking about someone, just tell a small story. In Ngani, people a month ago, they would remember that there was a body of a child, of a seven-year-old child, that was found after 5 days by members of the community and the police, and she was chopped up and she was put in a body bag. And people knew who the suspect was. But what's interesting about this, you guys may know that Ngani has had high vigilante attacks in the past maybe 2 years or even now. But what was interesting was the community being able to apprehend the suspect together with the police and get the person arrested. And for us, this is a turning point. But at the same time, how do we get that very same frustrated community member to really add value or to really understand how to make sense of this budget or for the budget to really mean something to them? I have my colleagues here who are all from Mekhayelitsha, and they've all been victims of crime. They've all been giving evidence and different platforms to try and have impact on their stories. And so how do we make sense of these big numbers, which when you look at them, when my mother would look at them, she would make sense of them. She doesn't know if it's positive or it's negative. But what are the underlying things we really need to consider to see if we're really having an impact? Just one slide I want to bring your attention to. I have two maps on the screen on resource allocation. The blue map on the left is showing you the police to population ratio, and this is information that was tabled at the Kailisha Commission of Inquiry. If you look at the map, this, if you just look at the blue map, on my right hand side, that's where you see your Kailisha, Philippi, Makasa, Metal Plain, and all other areas. But on my far left, you see a lot of the affluent areas like your Kispay, your Lemberg and all the other areas. And though it's the same as they're showing different statistics. So if you look at the police population ratio on that other map, the dark red is the higher the ratio of police to population. So if it's from 1:1 to 1:2, about 3,000 people to policemen. Just to make it simpler, in a lot of the darker areas, we find that the police population ratio is about 1 to 232 people, which is fair enough. But you must also consider that there's also private security in areas like Bangladesh, and other infrastructure benefits, like your streetlights, roads, your ground systems. But if you look at your right, the areas with not blue, they're towards whitish, that's where you see the police population ratio very high. So that's where you see over 1,000 people really relying on police personnel. Okay, this is how it is. This is what the picture looks. But essentially, it doesn't make sense when you look at the numbers reported, because on the same vein, the areas which are really dark and red are areas which have the highest murder rate. And areas which are really light and red are areas which have a low murder rate. So the picture doesn't look really nice, because on the one hand, there are certain segment areas that contribute almost 1% of murders, but the police population ratio is about 232. And on the other hand, you have the 50 most unsafe areas in Cape Town that have a police population ratio of over 1,000, but those areas share over 1,400 murders a year. And the question is, how are we allocating our resources to really serve the needs of our people on the ground? And this is what we need to think about going forward, the drive is shifted. Again, I'm not going to go into detail on the vehicles, but I think people have spoken, the Deputy Minister and our colleagues from SAPU, because that obviously a lot of people want to go to report the crime, and they told, we've been told so many times, you need to go back because there's no vehicles. As long as you see there are vehicles on the yard, and the question is, how do you bring and improve confidence in those people? And we know also from the evidence that was submitted in the Financial Commission is that there are a lot of the vehicles allocated, but a lot of them are not operational. And so some of the problems that raised is that there's a long repair turnaround time, which means most of the vessels are allocated, like I said, but they're not operational. But sometimes you find that often one officer per vehicle, and I think that's not how it should be. And how do we correct this to ensure that when a person in Nengalini is called for the police, then they're able to respond to it. In the same way, when a crime happens in Site C, the response happens. And so how do we continue to make sure that the media communities do receive more vehicles, but also ensure that the vehicles that are currently just are really functional?
Yeah. Okay, I'll just go back to the slide on. Okay, again, good afternoon to Chairperson and to the members of the committee, and thank you for letting us present. I think I want to go back to the question of personnel. The first question we say is that on the first of it appears that we have more than enough resources allocated to the police. But what is clear to us, and what Mesa just spoke about, is the inefficient and ineffective allocation and uneconomic use of those resources. So what Kailenta Commission found is that there was a deeply, fundamentally irrational way in which police are allocated to poor communities, and I'm absolutely sure this is so in KZN, in the Free State, in Gauteng and so on, where the poorest communities have the least police, and yet they have the worst crime. And so there's an immediate question of how the police are allocated, and this is immediately unconstitutional. It's not unconstitutional tomorrow or the next day or so on. And it can be remedied immediately. Pumeza pointed out the powers of the National Commissioner in terms of the SATS Act and the powers of the Provincial Commissioner in terms of the SATS Act. And they have the power to immediately reallocate. And here we would like to appeal to all parties to stand behind the Minister to ensure that there is reallocation in this regard. Because as Pumeza pointed out, the richest communities, like where I live in the city of Cape Town, we have CCID, we have CCTV cameras, 104 CCTV cameras in the whole of, in the small part of the city, but in Kailacha, you have 16 CCTV cameras for 450,000 people. So the question of unequal distribution of resources is a very real one. When we speak about allocation of resources, the next question I wanted to point out is that when the Commission heard evidence, one of the things that became very clear to us was we were told the FCS functions well, but the police only reported that Kailacha with the highest number, as the township with the highest number of roads in the country, had the worst performing FCS. Now, that's very sad, because it's about what happens to women and children. Now, when they looked at the data, what you actually saw is that most of the FCS people there had been there for more than 5 years. They were burnt out, because they see rates from as much as 6 months old, as little as 6 months old, to as much as 90-year-old women. 10% of the rates are boys under 12. So you imagine you're a mother working in that unit, or a father, and you constantly see this. So you can't just blame them. You have to understand the burden they carry. But what struck us most is that you always see that saying, we have full complement of staff in this area and that area, and spend 100% of the budget. But the fact of the matter is that the FCS in Kailacha had 15 vacancies. 15 vacancies. Unfilled posts. Similarly with detectives, similarly with visible police and so on. And I promise you that this is not simply the case in Kailacha. It's the case in Manberg, Bontebo, Nyanga, which is probably the area with the worst crime in the province. So I'm not talking about the province, but I would like people to see it as an approach to what happens to police elsewhere in other provinces as well. Sorry, I'm really bad. I want to jump to ICT. One of the questions that we raised, and we did an access information application, where we saw which the company was that basically robbed the police of over 350 million rand by not producing a system on firearms registration which they were meant to. This company is a company called Waymark, they're on the banned list of the UN for two things. One, for rigging elections in five African countries, for helping to rig elections in five African countries, and second, for having been found guilty of corruption in other countries. So the question for us is that not only in relation to the IT projects, but there generally a serious problem of misspending, misallocation, no oversight, and sometimes very serious corruption, but the companies who are involved, there's been no consequence, real consequence for anyone yet. And so we would say that any funding of those things needs to be made conditional. That unless there are serious consequences reported to Parliament under the PMA, the mixed bunch of money can't be released to those people. Because whatever money they spend means that money at community level doesn't exist. The detective services, I just want to point out from our side one question. People did a lot of things about the Khayelitsha Commission, but the people for whom it was most beneficial to was the police. Because rank and file police gave evidence about what they face. Not rank and file, station commanders, detective commanders and so on. And the one station commander, Brigadier Dadla, said in American movies, you see one murder and a bunch of detectives, one doctor and a bunch of detectives descending on it. In South Africa, you have one detective and mass of murders for that one detective. Very often, detectives working murder have over 120 dockets. Over 120 dockets. And that's impossible for someone to do. Yes, Colonel Marais, weekends, there are 7 murders. They've got 110, Cape Town Central has 110 detectives, but Khayelitsha has 60 detectives. Whereas in Cape Town Central, the type of crime we would face here is breaking into cars, pickpocketing, really a robbery. But in Khayelitsha, they'll have 7 murders that same weekend, but with almost half the number of detectives. Once got any recommendations. Okay, so on recommendations, immediate plan to reallocate the resources. If we would like to ask the committee, to ask them for a plan, because that is required by law under the Equality Act. SAPS must report back to Parliament not only about our latest under-resourcing, but the 10 worst under-resourced stations in every province. So not to take all of them, not to say we're going to do all immediately, but show in KZN which are the 10 most under-resourced. Show in Mpumalanga which are the 10 most under-resourced. And say what's your plan to fix that over the next 3 to 6 months. So it's not a simple thing of saying do everywhere immediately. One of the things we want to recommend, and we want serious consideration, is that crime statistics should not be regarded as a performance indicator, the reduction in crime according to crime statistics. That's a problem if you rely on reducing crime by reducing crime statistics. Because as the police tell us, then you fight the crime statistics, not crime. So the question we would like to see is a moratorium on not crime statistics being published, but crime statistics being used as an indicator. Because we would like to see the underreporting making sure that crime reporting increases. Almost every one of my colleagues here who's been robbed will tell you they didn't report it to the police. They didn't report it. So the question is, what we would like to see is that crime stats not be the thing that is measured, that police are measured against. Because you cannot hold the police accountable for the crime that is committed. Except in cases like Gareth said, aggravated robbery where police can make a real difference. Just one quick question about facilities and police stations. Makata Police Station has been on the budget for 10 years almost. there's been a promise to have a police station in Makaza. Building hasn't started, even though it was meant to have been finished last year. So the question is, there must be a query of that, and we want to endorse what everyone here said about the rural stations without water, without electricity, and without sanitation.
One other thing that was raised earlier is that we know there's a lot of police stations which don't have water, sanitation facilities. For example, the commission did find that Lingaleti police station doesn't have holes in cells. They don't have exhibits where they keep the infected things that they confiscate from people. And it was interesting how they found that, because they found that only by doing site visits. And if you don't monitor, if you only monitor things on paper, we're not going to know what's happening on the ground unless we physically at some point verify if the structures and the results we say exist, really exist. In terms of information technology, I think it's important for SAS to really provide a report of their current IT contracts, because I think it's important for them to be monitored. Because it is public in Spain, and for us to really ensure that there is accountability, and maybe the portfolio committee to ensure that as well. And I think that he has mentioned the conditional bank deposits for PMA violation. There was also an issue raised about community centre policing. We feel that the surveillance secretariat should really provide information and resources to CPS, because we know a lot of our community policing forums, even though they were said to be 90% of them functioning, we know they're unfunctioning. I can tell you all the police stations in the country don't have a functioning CPF, only because one, of resources, and secondly because they also don't understand their mandate and their role, but also the fact that there's no proper, or maybe I don't want to say over-politicization, but there are politics that come to play, and I think with real guidance, they could really have the impact they ought to have. But then to be able to monitor police, like I said, you need to know what people on the ground are saying. You can't only monitor and evaluate them on their word. And that is where we feel that community scorecards could play a crucial role in hearing what the community thinks of the service they receive, but also what they think should be included in the performance indicators of the police going forward. Because they know what end products they would like to receive, and also they know what would measure the impact of the police on. And that includes staff within CPS and other local structures to ensure that the sector profiles that we have are really up to date, because you know sometimes the sector programs are really up to date but don't really speak to the community they're serving. With the detectives, I think Zaki has said, the commission did say it was quite crucial, because you cannot police a community and investigate crimes and ensure that there's a proper investigation and proper condition raised if the resources of the detective service is not supported. And I think that's not something that needs to come in 2 years, it's something that's quite urgent to ensure that people feel safe, to ensure that people feel okay to report the crime and really be updated on what the status of the crimes are. And just lastly, the resources of the SS units, and we feel that's crucial and something that cannot wait. And also assessment of vehicles that we have and how we sort of manage them. Thank you.
Can I just say one other thing? Is ever since the commission, we have had a really fantastic support for Sachin Kailash and Sachin in the province. And not only them, but the Department of Community Safety is working, and the province is working closely with them. And now there is really effective work. Just to give you one example, the police used to use an outdated map. The new Tuscan commander, General Brunt, said their map dated back to 1913. I mean, he was making a joke, but they really were using an old map. And we've now, after 3 months, we've put together a simple map that actually covers every area, with the names properly agreed, and it's been locked with CAS numbers. So I think that there is a possibility, and it's really good news, that what I want to say to people is there's good news about how we're working together and that it can be done.
Thank you very much for that presentation. We're going to take a 15-minute lunch break and we will come back at 1:45 to 2:00.
I'm at East Compressors. The secretary is keeping me on the toes.
It's well done.
Secretary of the